You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
Oh, the Johnny Rocket Launchpad is liberty. Each week, we strive to bring you the best guests in talk radio. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad delivers weekly interviews of noteworthy politicians, experts, and activists. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad is bringing the party to the Libertarian Party and launching ideas in your direction. Check us out at johnnyrocketlaunchpad.com. You can hear me, Kurt Nelson, and the beautiful Heather Nixon talk about the ideas of liberty. Rock and roll.
Hey there, Liberty lovers. This is Mark Clare of the Lions of Liberty podcast, where we strive to bring you great conversations about the ideas of liberty 3 days a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Check us out at lionsofliberty.com.
Hey guys, this is Roger Paxton, and if you're fed up with the government running every single aspect of your life, but you're not listening to the Lava Flow podcast yet, then what's wrong with you? Check us out at thelavaflow.com, or just go back to sucking up to the government. The Lava Flow podcast, striking the root every single episode.
We are supported by listeners like you. Donate per month or make a one-time donation through PayPal or Patreon at wearelibertarians.com. Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I am your host, Chris Spangle. We Are Libertarians brings you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves. We explain to you what the hell is happening in our world today and how we can fix it by thinking differently. This is a podcast brought to you by the We Are Libertarians Network. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, share this episode with friends, and support us through PayPal or Patreon at wearelibertarians.com. We are supported by listeners like you, so $1 per episode by pledging $5 a month helps us grow. And we are always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@wearelibertarians.com. I am your host, Chris Spangle. To my left, on
rarer than the rarest of Pepes.
Yes. Is Greg Lenz. Greg, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. And across from me is the handsome Seth. I don't know what we're going to fake call your last name.
You can say the last name. I don't care about
Should
that.
Should we say okay. Hyman?
You just didn't want it SEO searchable.
Yeah, I didn't want it typed out. So in the show notes, don't put Hyman, but...
Hyman.
Yeah.
Seth, you look... Your hair is very Nazi youth today.
Oh, man. I actually had a revelation about this at work. I had coworkers inform me that I have a Nazi youth haircut.
You do.
And it was a half black, half white guy who informed me of that. I had no clue beforehand.
That was an undercut?
No, I know. Well, I didn't realize it was like associated with Nazis. It
was the worst gay ever.
All right.
I saw an article.
Aaron Ewart's haircut, and I thought that's what I want.
I saw an article of like Washington Post that was saying like talking about Richard Spencer and the whole Nazi haircut thing.
They're not Nazis. Richard Spencer isn't a Nazi.
Well, shut up,
really?
Greg. Only
they're
Nazis.
They're identitarians.
That.
Identitarians.
I'm saying that facetiously, by the way.
Okay.
But is that seriously what they say?
They're identitarians.
Just translates to like
Nazis, right?
We need to prefer
ethno-nationalism.
Yeah. We need to breed within our race and all that sort of thing.
No, actually not, but it's not about breeding. That's too far down the rabbit hole. That's Nazism.
I don't know. When I hear ethno-nationalism, I think Nazis for some reason.
Ethno-nationalism would be like Israel.
Okay.
So it'd be democratic.
Keep Israel Jewish?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's what ethno-nationalism would be.
Isn't that Japan's whole thing?
Yep.
They don't like the haifu? They're
the most racist country on earth.
Oh, yeah.
What? Really?
Japan considers the Korean people dogs because when it was discovered, they shared genetic lineage. They rejected it, and they call them openly, they're dogs. We are not in any way associated or genetically linked to the Korean people.
And those are just like... I mean, still broad, like, East Asian category. Like, I saw a thing about people who are, like, half black, half Japanese, or half white, half Japanese, and especially for the half black, half Japanese, because they can consider lighter skin to be more beautiful, they have a hard time.
Accepting it.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. That's, like, if you are, like, if you're a daughter that marries a non-Japanese, you know, man in Japan, you have done a dishonor to your family and your country.
Interesting. Well,
so my guilt is totally alleviated.
We are right out of the gate, right?
Yeah,
into
three
right
white
into,
guys talking about race.
We're right into race.
Cherokee,
yeah.
Cherokee. So this is where I have the high ground.
You know, I know another native.
I get uncomfortable when the Cherokee have the high ground. I feel like I'm about to get custard.
And I feel like you're going to build me a casino and put me in a chain link fenced area.
You know, Greg, I met somebody. It was one of those those gay libertarians in that group I was telling you about.
Uh-huh.
He is a card-carrying Native American. I mean, as white as you are, but has...
Hey, what's that supposed to mean?
Has a card that, like, a registered card that says he is of, like, Native American descent because he's, you know, 1/4 or 1/8 Navajo or whatever.
To get that
else.
Card, you have to be 1/4.
Yeah, okay, then he's probably one.
Yeah, you have to document it, too. Yeah, but, I mean, it's an elaborate process, and you have to be born on a reservation, I believe.
But he pulls that out as his like race card and arguments and stuff. So you should get
valid.
Something like that. Yeah,
that's totally valid. It's we
he's
took
like,
their
he's
land.
He's like, I think you need to check your white privilege and we'll lay it out.
I agree. That's why when I see that undercut, I get so offended.
All right, now Seth.
Just jealous.
Seth is our gay correspondent here on We Are Libertarians.
Chief
we have
gay you, correspondent. Chief,
our only gay correspondent. We have some mixers. Is that what they're called? Is that what they're called?
Mixers?
Bi?
That would be the term.
That's a new one. Yeah. I haven't heard that.
Genital
mixers.
Genital mixing?
I'm thinking like... he's saying mixers, and I'm thinking like some kind of...
Me too.
Like a drink or whatever?
I'm thinking race mixing, and then I'm like...
No, like...
I was thinking of like alcohol.
No, like sword fighting or, you know, clam mashing.
Well, I don't understand lesbian sex. I don't think anyone does. I mean, well, there's not at least one penis involved. What the fuck's the point?
There isn't anybody who understands less about women than you that I know.
That's true. That's
right.
Very true.
I was there when you touched your first breast.
Yes, both of you were. But, you know, it's interesting. Like, I learn more about the female body.
Anatomy?
Yeah, and how that whole that shit works from, like, my straight friends.
Right.
And it's like... Like, I remember when I found out that there were three holes down there. That blew my mind. I had no clue.
Right.
I assumed it was, like, similar to how, you know, men are, where one hole...
Shared exit.
Yeah, as a double function. But, no, and it just... Like, the more I learned, there was, like, a real strong period for, like, a year or
two. So you didn't
take
health class at Avon?
Well...
He just sort of zoned out when they got to the women part.
That should have been your sign.
You think I would have known then, yeah. But I was like just very subconscious, like always focusing when it was talking about
every other guy,
you know,
at that moment
stuff.
Is trying to not stand up to hide their bones. So it's like, can we go on? I want to hear more about the male anatomy.
He gets in there. He's like, the fallopian tubing. Do I get that at Lowe's? I don't know.
Jeez.
That's too good. Too good.
We are on Facebook Live. We apparently the sound and the video is choppy. It's a mess, but I have terrible internet thanks to Harry.
I know.
Harry came over here and tried to make my internet better, but it's terrible. I have signed. Listen, LeBron went to South Beach. I have signed with AT&T.
You
and
have.
On the March 1st, we are getting good internet here at the We Are Libertarian Studios.
What are you on
wow.
now?
Yes. I have the apartment complex internet. And so it's just...
The fuck does that mean?
It's their own personal network, right?
It's a bag of crap is
your
what it
apartment
means,
complex is an ISP. Like, who's it
right.
with? Comcast or...
No, it's just through the apartment complex.
Well, they probably have
they
contract
have to get it
through Xfinity.
Right.
Because they're the closest provider down here.
Yeah.
Xfinity?
Mm-hmm.
That is AT&T.
Now that's Comcast. Trust me.
Wait.
It's,
oh, shit. It is Comcast. Yeah. Sorry. I sound so stupid.
Yeah. So I don't know what it is, but it's terrible and it's not working for me. It's not working for all of the people that try to watch Facebook Live. So we're gonna do better on March 1st, hopefully. But we are videotaping this to our brand new Facebook page. So we had a little bit of weird luck. We have grown massively on Facebook, mostly due to the kind, amazing efforts of one great libertarian named Rob Powell. And Rob was the administrator of a Gary Johnson fan page. And basically, it was a fan page that had 2,000 or 3,000 likes for a few years and then just skyrocketed in 2016 up to 78,000 likes at one point. So it got really big, and he was posting great content. There is a guy by the name of, I don't know his last name, John, who runs A Libertarian Future. If you've never been to the website, alibertarianfuture.com, go check it out. He always pulls a lot of interesting stuff, and through the election, I really relied on him and that website to find really good content around Gary Johnson, and he always...
Not just press releases. He has really rich content.
He posts good stuff, and he's posting to our Facebook page now. And there was another guy named Charles Perallo. Now, some of you may have heard the name Charles Perallo.
I thought it was Carlos.
No, it's Charles. And Charles Charles ran against our good friends Nick Sarwark and
Mark Rutherford
and Brett Pajonas, who is also a friend, for national chair of the Libertarian Party in Orlando. He lost. Apparently, he's like a younger guy, and he was involved in this page. And this is the second time that he's done this, okay? Rob was trying to find a non-Gary Johnson-related name. They had changed the page. And so they, Charles suggested We Are Libertarians. Well,
of all the gin joints in all the world.
Right. And Rob just said, hey, that sounds like a good name. I like that. And he made that the page. And Charles used to be associated with another great libertarian website and outfit. If you're not liking these people, following these people, then you need to go check out Being Libertarian. And he was a part of that, was not a part of it anymore, started his own Being Libertarian page and set up a close domain. And that,
Being a Libertarian.
Right. Instead of the 300,000 likes or whatever that big page has, his has 20,000. So he's just back. And so he was trying to do that to us.
He still uses that on his LinkedIn profile.
Right.
Co-founder of Being Libertarian.
Right. And when confronted about this, because I was at lunch one day a week or two ago, and my phone blew up.
Yeah.
It was like, holy cow, what's going on? Somebody's trying to steal the Weird Libertarian's name. Now, we're going on our fifth year starting next month. Next month will be the fifth year of We Are Libertarians. And we've built a pretty good platform here. You know,
Media empire?
Media empire is a good word for it, Seth.
Yeah.
On election day, we were about 4,500 listeners, 4,200 listeners. And now we're at 6,200 people listen a month. In January to an episode of We Are Libertarians. We're massively expanding. And Charles had never heard of us. And even though he is considers himself a libertarian media genius and is involved, I don't know how he couldn't have heard of us before, but it happens. Listen, we don't bill ourselves as the most famous libertarians. We're not Austin Peterson.
No, I mean, that was his criticism in the little bit of the Facebook dust-up that transpired on your page.
Right.
When you... took a page out of the Donald Trump playbook and publicly called him out.
We'll get to there in that part of the story. And so,
yeah, spoilers.
So I got a nice message from Rob, and I got a message from Charles basically saying, hey, this is a mistake. I didn't mean for this to happen. Just wanted you to know. And I have built up a good friendship over the last week with Rob. He is a great guy.
Awesome.
And
guy.
He's written a couple great articles at wearelibertarians.com that you should go and check out. And so he and I got talking, and he's just like, listen, I got a lot of life commitments going on. You guys seem to have a thing going on. Let's just keep it the name and let's merge the pages. You can have the page. And all I want is I want to be a part of We Are Libertarians. I want to write. I want to be able to post on the page. I want to come and on the podcast occasionally. And I said, great, absolutely, because we're always looking for people to join what we do. We're always looking for writers.
And he brings a different, you know, he's much more in the community. Like, well, he pays attention a lot more than we do or have time to.
Well, he's more of a left libertarian than, let's say, you. And he is
helicopter blades in the distance.
Right.
A physical removal libertarian.
Right. And so yeah, he's joined the team, and today we merged the pages. We're actually broadcasting this to our Facebook Live page. And we went from 72 plus 19,000, merged those, and now we have 65 as of this broadcast. But hopefully that'll cycle through and bounce back up over the next few days. I don't know what's going on. But either way, 65,000 likes from 19,000 yesterday.
Solid growth. Especially when all you had to do was... You know, sort of, I guess, what, patent troll somebody?
Right.
Trademark troll somebody.
So So listen, obviously we don't have the name trademarked or anything. I mean, this is not copyrighted, but we are building a brand and hopefully a business at some point and becoming a full-time entertainment and news outlet.
Or a meme consulting firm.
Meme consulting firm as well. And so, you know.
You know there'll be like scheduled budget for that.
Oh, yeah.
In 2020.
Absolutely.
But yeah. See, when confronted about all this, Charles posted on the bigger page that a smaller page is causing a dust up. And when I would talk to him, you know, basically behind the scenes was saying to the other side, like, who cares? We'll just steal the name. What does it matter? I found out that he had done this to Being Libertarian. So the guy also has a history with Being Libertarian and with Austin Peterson. He's pretty open about he's trying to tear Austin down. And think what you might about Austin Peterson. Trying to tear somebody down who is successful to build yourself up is a pretty lame way to get yourself to the top. And so I just went on my Facebook and I said, here's the situation. Here's what happened. You can, you know, I hope Charles will write in the comments his version of what happened. But I believe that he was intentionally trying to hijack our name and trying to take over what we're doing and have brand confusion to benefit to his vision. He was trying to piggyback. And when we were, you know, and he said that's not true. To be fair to Charles, he said he had never heard of us. It was a complete accident that they stumbled upon We Are Libertarians. He offered up 13 names, and Rob picked We Are Libertarians, and that's how it happened, okay? I still think that people ought to know what happened and why there are two pages and now how we have this massive growth. And I think that people, as Charles grows older and becomes a bigger factor in the libertarian movement, I think everybody should be aware of what Charles is up to. Being a news organization reporting on the libertarian movement like We Are Libertarians does, I'm happy to give you my side of the events on Charles and what happened. And, you know, it's a settled matter. He has a vision for the page, but unfortunately I was made the sole admin. And when he said, you know, we have a vision, we're trying to do this. And I said, bro, we is a me. I'm the sole admin, and my first act was removing you. And so...
have you heard of Pinochet?
Right.
Physically.
Right. So it is a great thing that has happened to the We Are Libertarians universe. We have rapidly expanded the amount of people that are aware of us. There are probably going to be some confused people about who We Are Libertarians is. But we want to thank Rob... first off, for being a really good guy.
Yeah.
Like, Rob, you can tell that he is a genuinely good human being. He is genuinely nice. He is...
just a stand-up guy.
I think he was misled, and I think that really pissed me off, because I find him to be a very trustworthy... and he's very committed to growing the libertarian movement, and he's very excited to be a part of We Are Libertarians. And his excitement has excited me.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it has made me get my butt in gear. And we've launched a few things. We're posting more writing on the website. And I just want to thank Rob for his generosity and for being a good guy.
And wanting to be a part of it.
And wanting to be a part of it. Because he didn't have to do that. He could have just said, you know, I'm taking your name. I don't care what you think. We're going this direction. And he did what's right. So...
I'm excited to have him, you know, to be a part of his thing and him to merge with us. And
absolutely.
I look forward to, you know, he has his ear much closer to the ground than I do within the inner goings of LP related activities,
right,
and the libertarian movement in general. And that's something where we don't have as frequent of contributors or have our ear to that ground. So
yeah,
it's going to be huge for us.
Yeah. So thanks to Rob. Go check out his writings. One of the things that I have wanted to do. First off, we've launched a few new podcasts, all right? We have, if you go into iTunes and search We Are Libertarians, you're going to get a lot of hits, okay? Everything from Storytime with Gina and The Cap with Joe Ruiz and The Show Report with
Ryan Ripley.
Ryan Ripley, the 2013 era of We Are Libertarians, where we were really starting to kind of grow and get our oats under us. But we've launched a few new shows. Okay, first off is the We Are Libertarians Articles podcast. So I'm going to take some of the best articles from the website and read them. And several of you have already subscribed, but I finally sat down and buckled down and did it. And you can hear, if you're just not a reader, it's hard to, I'm an audible learner. Like, I love listening to podcasts. I love watching documentaries while I clean the house, or I work on the website, I'll have a documentary on, or cook, I'll be listening to a podcast. And so it's just easy to take in the information like that. In here, let me turn the camera around. I just feel like people need to see my handsome face while I do this on Facebook Live.
They're not tuning in for Seth and I.
No, Seth is very handsome, but unavailable to 30% of our audience.
It's all
because they're women.
70%, that much.
70% of you are men, and you can have Seth. Well, you're very, listen, you're young.
I'm a niche market.
Yeah, you're young, you're attractive, you can be very choosy.
Do we have a youth podcast?
Hey, hey now. I'm getting triggered.
So the other one is Miranda's World. Miranda Barnett came on this podcast, and man, did she steal the show. She stole the hearts of the Weird Libertarians universe. Did she not, Greg?
She is the wall sweetheart.
Speaking of women, I don't understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a wasted effort. She just is. Yep. She's very zen. She just exists.
Yeah.
Psychoanalyzing it is a futile effort.
So we've got three episodes of Miranda's World we'll be recording. If I can wrangle Miranda over here on Sunday, like we've agreed to do, you'll get some more episodes.
It's going to be a free-range podcast, especially on the frequency as well.
I think if you listen to the episode of Weird Libertarian she was on, you realize Miranda's feral.
Yeah.
She's a feral woman.
Yeah, that was the perfect word.
Right.
Like high energy is like what came to mind.
Super
high. A little spastic.
Super like, high T.
It's one of those things where like I could, just listening to it, I felt like if I was meeting her in person, it would just be like too much. Like I wouldn't know how to handle it or mm-hmm. what to do with it. Like,
it's a full court press.
Yeah.
It is a full court press. But and the best way, because it doesn't bother me, because you probably say the same thing about me, but.
No, it's the Greg Lynn's experience and the Miranda experience, very different.
Well, yes, clearly.
So, much like Storytime with Gina, which was one of my favorite podcasts, much like Creating Maya, which is another great We Are Libertarians podcast, you're going to love Miranda's World. Now, the other one is The Cost. Now, this is almost like a best of We Are Libertarians. It is seven episodes of We Are Libertarians, which is a series within the 195 episodes of We Are Libertarians, plus one Creating Maya episode, where I have pulled out some of the best of We Are Libertarians and put it into an RSS feed called The Cost. And essentially what one of the tenets, one of the founding principles of We Are Libertarians is that we want to connect you to. There's a lot of professors in the libertarian movement. There's a lot of very smart people talking about a lot of lofty ideas, and a lot of libertarians really connect to those people, and I get that. But most people do not talk in professor, okay?
No.
As much as I get a lot from Tom Woods, and I think that he does a good job of bringing it down to, let's say, a 10th grade or a 9th grade level.
I'd say he's a he brings it down to a freshman in college.
Yeah,
level.
We're trying to bring it down to what would you say a third grade level?
I think we're sixth grade. We're sixth solid, but we're somewhere right. In middle school.
Right. Lots more fart jokes here.
Yeah.
What we want to do is really explain politics to you in the vernacular of the way that you and your friends talk as millennials. Because we are all friends, we all hang out with each other, we all love libertarianism, we all are news junkies, we're all nerds, and we just like to have a good time and hang out, and we're trying to put that on tape for you. And so the part of that is bringing a lofty thing like a philosophy. Mm-hmm. Okay, one thing, we don't want you to just buy into the libertarian philosophy, because I don't think that it's really hard to get somebody just to accept an entire philosophy and change your whole world in a day. You're going to take it brick by brick by brick by brick, Okay.
Even after months, it can be very hard to...
Absolutely. Yeah. So we don't do a ton. We do philosophy, but it's like putting squash in your kid's food. Like, we're sneaking it in.
Well, like Plato, you know, he told his entire... Right? All his writings are stories.
Right.
About people that didn't even live together at the same time. But he gave them personalities, and, you know, that's the way he did it.
Right.
Storytelling.
Now, the other aspect of what we do is we want to bring some emotion to it. I'm not like Greg. I rely on Greg because Greg is... You're much nerdier than I am. You have more time and enjoy more the philosophical and the research and the, you know, the stats and all that stuff. And I just like to feel, man.
Cue the Oprah moment.
I'm wearing tie dye Greg's and a Republican button up. I'm an ENFJ. Whereas Seth, you're an INTJ, right?
INFJ. Actually.
INFJ. Okay, so
the rarest kind.
Yeah.
So special snowflake sticker.
I date a lot of INFJs.
Oh.
Listen, if I ever go gay, you're my man. All right. But unfortunately, I'm only 5% gay for you. Feel sorry for you.
Well, 1 in 20 chance.
So, yeah.
Hey, if Vibbert has even as much, there's hope.
Jeff Vibbert, another podcast you should get, the Jeff Vibbert podcast. If the Patriots had lost the Super Bowl, he was willing to suck a dick. Just being honest. He was.
I don't even know who won. Like, I should have paid attention to that game if I knew there was a chance to blow Vibbert.
I told you, okay? Jeff is a fan favorite of both Seth and every woman I've ever dated. Every woman I've ever dated always goes, "I think Greg is so hot. I want to fuck Vibbert." It's always you two.
I think it's
they're triggering me. And so the cost is more of the emotional feeling type stuff, okay? It's storytelling. Maybe is the best way to put it.
That's the only way to grow, in my opinion, because it's a limited target market to go and, you know, preach the gospel of liberty to people desperately seeking it. Like, the majority, the only way it ever hits them is indirectly through the emotions.
Right. Yeah. I think if you listen to Amanda's story and you hear her 3-hour odyssey through the system of being a domestic violence victim, of dealing with what her daughter has dealt with in terms of sexual abuse, and the fact that the government at every single level and any safety net that is supposed to protect them has completely failed them, it is hard not to be a libertarian after that. And so, you know, we give you a lot of facts and figures through the week, but these are episodes that are meant to tell somebody's story. Here is the real human cost of government policy. When government policy is passed or bureaucracy is inert, then what happens to people who are stuck in the system? And it is just a punch in the gut, and a lot of that you're not going to want to sit down and listen to all 7 in a row, I don't think. But we want people to tell their stories. So if you're in the Indianapolis area especially, and you want to come sit in the studio, have a one-on-one conversation with me, and we'll talk about your experience. You got a taste of this with the last episode with Addie's story, where we talked about epilepsy and the CBD oil and how much it has helped her, but it is hard to get, and there's no foundational studies on this, and there's no testing on this stuff, and how that doesn't help her as much as it possibly could. And so you got an hour-long conversation with two parents who struggle with a rare disease and the effect that this thing has, but it isn't as effective because of government policy. So please go check that out. I've been in broadcasting for 13 years now, okay? I started in 2004 in broadcasting, and these are the 7 episodes that I am most proud of in all of the things that I have ever done, of the thousands of hours that I've talked into a microphone or produced in terms of radio shows. These are the things that I'm most proud of because these are episodes that can change minds and change lives. And through doing these episodes, we've helped the people that do these episodes by giving them a platform to tell their story that they can then link to legislators and the news media, and then they can grab onto it and go, oh, this is the story. How do I make this a 4-minute segment on the local news? The South Bend Tribune wrote a great series of articles on Woody and his plight. Several people have helped Amanda get a lawyer to kind of improve her situation. So we're really, with these episodes, trying to change people's lives in a multiple amount of ways. So
those are the ones that actually affect change.
Yeah.
Is this series, like, do you plan on adding new episodes to it?
Absolutely.
Well, is it, by that I mean, like, will it be new episodes, like, it's in the main, because all the episodes are still in the main rotation of WoW, right? So, yeah. Like, will all of the episodes be from other podcasts that just draw, like, this is a collection of them, or will it be, like, a new episode that's just in the cost that's not in
You'll get it in this feed. I try to put everything into this RSS feed.
Okay. It's like one, you know, it'll catch all. Right. It's a catch-all feed, but then it's like those are the people that just want that special collection.
The cost is just a like curated collection.
Mm-hmm. Because these are a series that has been within it, and so what I try to do is I try to give you one massive feed, but then also kind of extract some things out and put it so you can go back and listen to just those episodes. Plus, I think if you're talking about episode 17, most people have never heard about the smoke shop and it being closed down by government regulation. Most people have never heard that episode. And
that's Evans.
This has nothing to do with
that.
That's not
Evan? No. Oh, I thought that was Evans.
No, but they finally got their feet. There's Roll Your Own Tobacco and it got outlawed. They got crippled. They became a vape shop and then they got crippled again and they're finally out of business. So,
because they didn't have the money to get grandfathered in.
Exactly right. So we are trying to do something special by letting people tell their stories. It is something that I'm passionate about. And if you've got a story out there that you think is important that shares the human cost of government policy or you know somebody that might want to talk, please let me know. I'd love to talk to a refugee, especially a Syrian refugee. And I've got a couple lines on one, but I think that would be an interesting perspective because I think you hear so much of these headlines. We get so built up with these talking points. And you never really get to hear the human side of what this all means. We think that DCS is actually protecting children, but DCS is meaning it really means that more children are being raped and abused. And you should be pissed off that your money is going towards that. And
you're subsidizing rape and abuse.
Absolutely. So, with that being said, I want to thank you for indulging my monologue and this little self-promotional bit, but I think as we add so many new people to We Are Libertarians, we want to explain what we're about. We got a comment, a guy that I blocked on Instagram, I don't listen to you guys because you're too much fluff and not enough substance. Well, we give you plenty of substance. We do 3 fucking hour podcasts.
But, I mean, that's a good litmus test for us. As long as we're getting that complaint, we're on the right side.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we want. We don't want, you know, Roger Paxton does a great job of getting in and giving you the facts.
We're not trying to be all things to all people.
So, awesome. So, with that being said, that's kind of what we're about. We're irreverent. We love to bust each other's balls. We're a group of about 20, 25 friends that are all in the Indianapolis area that get together and chat and talk about politics, our lives. We make memes of each other. We pull pranks on each other. We do a lot of dumb shit. And we thank you for listening. If you're new, that's what we're about. And the first 20 minutes usually is jackassery. We kind of got into it because we were playing grab ass before, not literal grab ass, but we got into it a little bit before, so we shot our wad, so to speak. But that being said, we do have a present for Seth.
We both got presents for Seth.
Yeah,
you know, as a distinguished guest, we felt that we wanted to get you something to show how special your friendship and your wanting to be a part of, and actually your introduction to me at the Young Americans for Liberty event. I wanted
that
to commemorate that.
Go down in history.
Exactly. And so because of that, we decided to get you gifts. Would you like to?
No. You go first.
You
I
want
think,
me to?
Yeah.
Okay. Now I need you to. I need this camera's on, right?
Yeah, that camera's on.
So I need you to close your eyes.
All right.
I need you to put your hands out like this.
Yep. Put your hands. You're going to feel something warm.
Extended right here.
You're going to feel something warm and slightly soft.
Now you can't open them, okay?
They're closed.
All right.
I'm kind of scared.
Greg is taking the present out now, and he is undoing them.
This is where I need to be, like Daredevil. and just
all right. Now he is trying
don't
to
look. Don't look.
He is feels sharp.
He is applying the clamps to Seth.
Okay.
Okay. Greg, you're trying to help Seth. What are you doing?
Mike Pence contacted me. Vice President Pence contacted me.
Yeah.
And he said, I really care about Seth. You know, I want you to give these to him, you know, since I want him to see the light. I want him to be in heaven.
Now, I've got a 9-volt battery over here. Will that be enough to get the gay out of you?
I don't know. I'm pretty damn gay. Might take more than just 9-volt.
All right. Well, I've got a bike here. Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get you.
You're fine. Well, you were like restraining back. You didn't want to like, you know, chomp my fingernail off or something.
Yeah.
I started to get concerned. Like, this is a CIA torture method.
Yeah.
Greg has gone like full right wing.
So you're going to International Students for Liberty Conference in D.C.,
yeah,
and you're going to meet up with a lot of your gay libertarian friends. We want you to get in a circle and electrocute the gay out of each other.
Oh, yeah.
And then give us a full report, because we're trying to curry favor with the vice president.
Right.
Now, Greg, can you explain where you got this idea?
Yeah, so for people that don't get the reference, Mike Pence, he is someone that is in the past... Did he support it, or did he just comment on
it?
No,
like, it's like one of those, like, half-true things. Like, a website from, you know, 10-plus years ago had some little blurb in there about gay people saying he was encouraging them...
That's right.
He was encouraging them to seek, like, basically conversion therapy.
Well, yeah, it's a therapy to cure gayness.
That got picked up... So basically him saying, like, I encourage gay individuals to, like, try and cure themselves.
Seek treatment.
Yeah, seek treatment or whatever. That got picked up and turned into, OMG, he's going to round us up in camps and, like, literally shock the gay out of us.
Yeah, and then the meme community, though, got it.
Oh, my gosh.
They embraced it. The people on his side embraced it. And it's a thing of beauty, really.
One of my favorite memes is, you know the meme with the three guys where it's, like, shrugging?
Yes.
And it's Pence's face photoshopped over all three, and it's like, when your mom asks why the electric bill is so high.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I died laughing.
I just saw
one
on 4chan that it was the best one. I sent it to all you guys, and it was, you know, his intense eyes. Mike, just get the clamps and up the amps, Pence. And I died. And the rest of them are him, you know, being taken over with electricity and saying repent. Like, just beautiful. So I saw these and I go, oh, and Seth comes on. I want to get him a present.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and those are for you.
I appreciate it, Greg. How very thoughtful. My mother will be so happy.
I know.
Now, just a reminder that we're an adult show, okay? We are not for children, all right? We are PG-14.
Is it me talking about the three holes earlier today?
No, no. That's mostly for the gift that I have for you, sir.
Oh, okay.
Now, once we hook you up to...
I heard about those Christmas gifts. Is this in a similar vein?
Speaking of veins.
Oh. Oh, my.
No, once we hook you up to the old Chrysler 200 car battery and shock the gay out of you, I have a...
Oh, my gosh.
You're going to feel an overwhelming attraction to the vagina. Okay. I myself am a huge fan.
I can't understand.
I'm a huge fan.
I am confusion right now.
Now, a lot of guys might need this, but you're especially going to need it. It is from my friend, Dr. Sadie Allison. Mm-hmm. She is a sexpert. Okay.
Oh.
And she runs a company called Tickle Kitty, and she sells sex toys. So, for instance, we've got a sex toy here that, Greg, put this mustache on.
Oh my God.
So this is a mustache that you put on your face, and it looks like one of those old weightlifter mustaches.
It's curly.
Like the Iron
Except
Sheik.
It's vibrating.
It's vibrating. Put it up right up to the mic. So you don't even really have to do the work.
No. It's like fake chow.
If it had a 10-foot pole, maybe I could do it. But
I also snatched myself lipstick.
Jeez.
But I got a book for you.
Oh, okay,
it's by Dr. Sadie Allison. It is called The Mystery of the Undercover Clitoris. And it is orgasmic fingertip touching every woman craves. And so it is to arouse.
How did you come to have this book in your possession?
I stole it. I saw it and I stole it.
Respected private property rights
and
stole the shit out of it.
I mean, look at what we're. I mean, there's.
Are there pictures?
Oh, there's pictures.
Oh my God, the cover looks like a graphic novel straight out of Marvel.
Right.
I'm not even.
This is to arouse your lover's clitoris like never before and become her orgasmic sex god.
To be honest, I'm kind
overnight.
Of not exactly clear on what it looks like, so the pictures would be really
just not, if I just showed you this, it would look like the Atlas Shrugged lettering.
Show the, show the Facebook Live viewers.
Okay,
show the camera here. Right there, over here. And it is very detailed, Seth, and it will teach you all you need to know about manipulating the majoras, the minoras, the buttons, the holes.
Are there really that many parts to it?
There's a lot of parts.
Should have paid attention to health class, Seth.
And it depends if you're talking about a tight Subway sandwich or Jimmy John's, you know, it's
there's two layers of lips.
Yeah.
This is like the Sarlacc in Star Wars. There's like
some can look like a Ferengi's head, yes.
Oh my god,
this is in depth.
Yeah,
so after we hook you up to the old 200 and put the clamps on,
right,
you're gonna need that. You're gonna thank us.
Now Greg has a truck. Do you think we need
truck? Are you a truck?
Are you a truck level gay?
I can get us a Mack truck.
We know
on the Kinsey scale, I definitely score a truck at least.
All right, so I'm 5% gay. What percent would you say you are?
Like 100 being the max?
Yeah, yeah.
99.8? Like,
so there's 0.2% of you that's straight.
Like, every once in a blue moon, like, and I can probably count it with just one hand.
Waving that hand around.
I'll see a girl who I'm like, you know what? She's like actually pretty attractive.
Right.
And like, there was a time where, like, probably a year, 6 months ago or so, earlier than that, like, I would have actually said, like, yeah, I'd fuck her just to try it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, for science. Just experiment.
For science.
Just see what it's like.
He's an experimenter.
I've since learned more about the female body that kind of turned me off of that. And so I'm not even like, never, you know, you all have seen the most I've done with a girl. It's not going to get any more than that.
It was in the middle of a restaurant.
I learned more about like how their bodies work, and it just freaked me out too much. I don't even want to try it once for science. But every once in a while, I'll see a girl that's like attractive. It's just like too bad she doesn't have a dick.
Right.
So
if we were to force you, gun to your head, to choose a female celebrity, who would you think?
Who'd be your waifu?
I don't even know. I don't pay attention to female celebrities. Like, I have a short list of like male celebrities I want to bang.
Who are those?
Oh, Tom Daly, of course.
Oh, the swimmer, the diver.
Jesus!
Even he
activates that 5%.
He might have bumped me up to 6.
Oh yeah,
I get it. I get
don't
it.
Don't you see him? You're just like, God damn! Like,
well, I don't go that far, but I about hooked myself up to my car. So.
That was a significant step.
It was. I was watching it with you. We were watching
it. Get the clamps.
In chat, man. And I was ready to call my buddy Mike, who works for Mike Pence. And
yeah. Oh, those two.
Call Mark.
Those two guys that were wrestling at the Olympics at the pool party. They should stop wrestling each other and start fucking each other. Those guys I liked.
We went from watching the Olympics to fanfic.
Oh man,
in the middle of at what
Olympic fanfic.
Sean Mendes. Oh, what's his name? Brendan Thwaites. I believe is how you say his name.
He's too millennial for me.
He's from The Giver, and he's the dude in Oculus, but he had long hair in there. But the way his hair is in The Giver. Oh my gosh. Like, he's adorable. And he's actually bi. He's one of those mixers.
He's
as
a
you
mixer.
Call it.
He's a genital mixer.
That means there's a chance.
Yes.
Like, somebody's going to be so triggered by that.
Like,
I love it.
Sean Mendes, you know, hasn't come out yet. There's still chance. Oh, Alex from Target. He came out.
All right, calm it down, man. Calm it down.
You got me fangirling about all the celebrities.
It was just a genuine, like...
That's my short list.
It's a mixer. I don't... What do you call that? And I couldn't think of bi. Two letters.
That's all time. That is all time.
That was an Aunt Donna moment.
You successfully triggered anyone that is on the spectrum of, you know...
Listen, we don't do this to... I don't know. Seth,
to accommodate the butthurt of people looking to be outraged.
There's a guy in this picture.
There you go. All right.
And it, I can't really see, but it looks like he might be fucking her from behind.
Yeah, well, see,
he's kind of cute.
You do, you can lay, you do a spoon, and then you can, you know.
There's a gay version of it. Yeah, yeah.
It's probably easier in your case than it is in ours.
Yeah. Here's his dick. You can see it.
There
now.
You go.
A good portion of the shaft and the balls as well.
Now listen. Do I need to take the book from you, or are you going to be able to focus?
The problem is you got me a book that has a dude in it.
Can you hold that up real quick?
Yeah, look at that. Look at that shit.
No, get your face in this.
Like, look at that.
He is very excited.
Can I get a picture of the cover, too?
Oh, yeah.
Now, I want you to take this to ISFLC.
Uh-huh.
All right? I want you to go out to D.C., bring this book with you. I want you to, so that way, if there's anybody...
God, look at the smile on his face.
Well,
sorry to interrupt you.
Look at her. Of course he's smiling.
I don't care about her, but, like, he has, like, a goof... Like, that's not a goofy or something. Like, it looks like a... He's so animated.
He's also...
it's like cartoon porn. It's very...
Yeah, and
it's very strange.
He's kind of like Greg. You don't know what he is.
Swarthy.
He's not from here.
He needs to work on his manscaping, though.
If you saw him walking down your sidewalk, you'd switch over to the other side late at night.
Oh, and he's circumcised, too. This is horrible.
Oh, see, Seth is triggered by that.
An elitist.
I am.
He's a foreskin elitist.
Very much so. I am. Sorry, Jews, but... It is what it is.
Okay.
Sorry, globalists.
All right, let's get to it. We are going to talk about Michael Flynn and the Russian stuff. Okay, so we've covered this before, and we've got now you're triggering me. I'm turned on now.
Step up right away.
My high tea is being triggered by this book. I my tea is activated. I might flip over the table and
this
immediately.
This book is very multicultural.
Absolutely.
Every other page, token black guy or black chick.
Now, in the past, we've talked about the Russian hacking stuff. We talk about the Russian
interference
and all this. And to me, it has always been there's always been a lot of smoke, but not any fire. There's never been anything that I've read that it has gone like, ooh, okay. Now
it's all innuendo. Like every news article you read, it can be 750 words, 1500 words, and when you get down to the evidence, it's well, the experts agree, or someone said this of high, you know, credibility.
Flashbacks to Iraq,
And so I read this article from the New York Times that said that was. Basically saying that they had ties to Russia during the campaign, and none of it was it was a lot of experts say, again, it was a lot of smoke. I was listening to 538's podcast, had an emergency podcast. You're free to take that as well, Seth. I don't know if that helps in your business. It's certainly good for mine.
I'm on the receiving end of such activity.
All right. So. Okay.
Well, he's alpha.
He's a power bomb. No, yeah. He's not an alpha, is what he's saying.
I am in my own way.
Right, yeah, you're power bottom. That's what we're saying.
I can't turn this damn thing off. Oh, wait, I figured it out.
Okay.
You gotta flick the button.
Yeah.
Flick the button,
like,
Seth.
Like the bean as well. Yeah.
Chapter 4.
Yeah.
Now, so I read the New York Times article the other day, and we were having a discussion with one of our more liberal friends, and she is just disgusted by all this. And, of course, all the Russians are taking over. And as we posted on WeAreLibertarians.com in an article that I wrote, the Russians are considering gifting, quote-unquote, Snowden to Donald Trump. And The Observer, which is a publication formerly owned by Trump's son-in-law, Jared
Kushner, the Kushner family.
And they are reporting that intelligence briefings are being withheld from the Trump administration because the intelligence agency is so worried that everything is going straight to the Kremlin. Now, here's how I view this. I'm anti-power, okay? I'm pro-liberty, anti-power. Mm-hmm. I vote mostly with the Libertarian Party, but I vote for Democrats and Republicans, and I vote for liberty. That is my number one thing. When I look at Trump, I don't see liberty. Now, there are some things that he may or may not do that will bring us more liberty.
Neil?
When I look at the permanent Washington, the power establishment, the this town crowd by the book of Mark Leibovich, I see power, and I'm against it. And when I hear that, and we have talked multiple times in this podcast, that those people are threatened by Donald Trump, And they're doing anything they possibly can to try and thwart Donald Trump's ascension to power or to be effective in any way, shape, or form at clawing back their power. And when I see a lot of this stuff, I'm skeptical of it because you see a lot of the same, quote unquote, experts and the intelligent community, which you think the journalists are the most butthurt community of people. The intelligence community really is taking the cake in terms of prima donna, just listen to us tantrum fits.
Well, they have unjustly been given this sort of... they've never been politicized,
right?
So they've had the, you know, they've never had to be under such scrutiny. I mean, J. Edgar Hoover was probably the one time when they really were under such scrutiny and subject to being politicized by an opponent. But right now, you know, they're an intelligence community who their commander in chief, he doesn't consider what they do intelligence.
Right.
He doesn't value the effort of their work or believe the information that's being passed on to him. Given their poor track record since basically 9/11, it's hard to argue he's wrong.
Right.
What intelligence have they actually, they didn't see the, I mean, they, or we now, well, we don't, we can't prove it, but I can, you know, make the same innuendos they can that Hillary Clinton turned a blind eye to the coup of Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. You know, the arrival of the Islamic State was not foreseen whatsoever. Otherwise, I'm sure the president would have probably delayed the removal of troops in Iraq. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. just time and time again, the intelligence that's been passed up has led to poor decisions. And we have a president that now disputes the, you know, the validity of it.
So why doesn't Trump get rid of them? Or can he?
You can't.
Why not?
Go ahead.
You still need the intelligence community. They are still like, so you're still getting, you're still needing to conduct intelligence analysis because they also do a lot of reports. So the best analysts are wrong 80% of the time. They do a lot of looking at facts they can gather that they may even have been fed with, you know, poor or someone trying to purposely set them up. Mm-hmm. And they go ahead and build narratives that aren't necessarily true because your policy analyst's job is to present the development of things 10 years out. And so you still need the information. And then eventually it sort of becomes the consensus and works its way up to the director who then passes it on and then passes, you know, that is what gets included in the intelligence briefings that Trump and his team receive.
So he can't just clean house because all those people are already too far in, like, working in the system?
Theoretically, you could, but restaffing it would be a unbelievably... I mean, one, he had to get his director, Pompeo, who just got confirmed. Mm-hmm. So he had to get his people in there first. You know, that was the big issue with the report that by the Russians about the Russian tampering in the election, in that Flynn had, you know, basically opened himself up to blackmail by communicating with the Russian U.S. ambassador. Was that it was done by Sally Yates, the same Solicitor General under the Obama administration, who was by default acting as head of the Justice Department during the transition until Sessions was confirmed. And so he didn't necessarily trust it because, one, these were the same people that investigated his campaign. They investigated Carter Page, an advisor to his campaign. They investigated General Flynn, who was being vetted for vice president during the campaign. They investigated Paul Manafort, who was his campaign manager during the convention, who the press purposely exploited the ignorance of the American people by alleging his Russian ties when his ties were to the Ukraine. Mm-hmm. If anyone knew, people in America don't understand the difference. So, like,
Russia, Ukraine, anything of the east of Germany is all
on the same side. You know, yeah. Oh, it's just the Soviet Union. The reality is totally different. The reality was Crimea was seized from the Ukraine, a democratically elected government deposed, and Manafort was on the side resisting Putin.
Yeah.
But because of the ignorance of the American people, it was easily to sell it as Russian tampering.
Right.
Because he had gotten $12.7 million since he's been consulting for that democratically elected person. But yeah, you have to have intelligence, I would argue, in order to see things coming, but it's become so dilapidated.
And he can't just clean house and put quote-unquote good people in there because it'd be too much of a downtime, like the transition period
for
that.
The CIA would be huge, and then where do you even really go? You're talking about people that have years of knowledge and relationships built up that have all the information flowing through compromised contacts and, you know, in Saudi Arabia and, you know, various parts of the world, and they're the, those are your eyes and ears, since we don't have formal diplomatic ties.
Right.
You know, that's one of the criticisms of the American surveillance or intelligence system, is that it's so tech-based. We have very few on-the-ground spies anymore, whereas that's why we rely on a lot of our information about combating terrorism, like lone wolf actors in the United States, is via the French, because the focus of their intelligence community is people on the ground, spies, mm-hmm. like 007 James Bond types. Mm-hmm. Years and years where they've gained trust and are actually feeding information. Because they were colonies that have fallen in a lot of areas, like in Mali, to radical Islam. And so they're able to have people stay in power by going ahead and joining the power of the radical Islamists, but then still being feeding information back to the French intelligence community.
All right, so let's... should we get into Flynn? Let's talk about Flynn, because this is the first casualty of the Trump administration. It didn't take that long to get here. And it seems to be one of those things that is, it's like, all right, I've been giving you guys the benefit of the doubt on the Russian thing, because it seems like the intelligence community and the press are kind of working together on this to discredit you and to knock down what your administration wants to do. But when you fire a guy for having ties to Russians and lying to the administration about it and lying to Mike Pence, and listen, being a part of the Indiana political scene, I know Mike Pence. I know of Mike Pence. I mean, I don't know him personally.
Well, he stole your a vocational emphasis for education.
He
from
did.
Rupert's campaign.
I'm becoming very familiar with Mike Pence.
Yes, I ran a campaign against him in 2012 for governor, and I know a lot of the people that worked for him when he was governor, and some of the people that worked for him as vice president, and. Pence is a guy that a lot of politicians are bullshit. Okay, Mike Pence believes everything he says, and Mike Pence is a genuine article. Okay, he's definitely a power hungry guy, and he's definitely driven. But at the end of the day, I think that he does want to be someone of character, and I think he is someone of character. You're never going to get Mike Pence is never going to get caught in a sex scandal. When the guy says he loves his wife, he loves his wife. When he tells people the truth, and I think that he demands the same thing. And I think that Flynn isn't getting cut because the liberal press pressuring people. It's because the people inside the administration say he's not there. So let's kind of get into what happened. He's lying about what? Why did Michael Flynn? Where should we start? Should we start why he got fired?
Yeah, I mean, he got fired without beyond any doubt.
Let's explain who he is.
Yeah, Flynn is who head of and his position.
National Security.
Mm-hmm.
Head of National, the NSA. So he is in charge of the infrastructure of the intelligence community's apparatus. And so he has been really critical his entire career, and which is why he was retired, because he was just too combative mm-hmm. and too much of a rogue guy. That he ended up really just his career was done. And so he got appointed because he's been an outlier in that he's openly criticized President Obama while being still active duty. And if you was it Hirschberg or the guy that wrote he wrote about the bin Laden, what actually happened in bin Laden. And
Cy Hirsch?
Yeah, Cy Hirsch. Yeah. So that was his contact when he wrote that article that blew the doors open about the bin Laden raid.
Okay.
And what actually transpired.
What does he say actually happened?
They were protected by Pakistani intelligence all those years. Oh. Bin Laden had been, and then we're sitting there sending foreign aid by the billions to prop up the people hiding bin Laden.
Yeah.
And thwarting our efforts. And then, so Flynn is just he's a real thorn in the side and, you know, fancies himself a truth teller, but he also is without a doubt the most aggressive against radical jihad.
Was that confirmed true, the bin Laden thing, that the Pakistanis were hiding him?
There was no way to confirm that was true or not, because the general in question never would answer.
Okay.
They didn't have the authority to bring him in for questioning.
Is it one of those things where, like, we don't have 100% proof, but there's a lot of, like,
if you believe General Flynn's tale, then it's true.
Okay.
that, you know, we went ahead and didn't pressure them when we could have. And so he also shaped the worldview. He wrote a really...
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me that much was true.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, they're going to have loyal factions as a Muslim, you know, a primarily Muslim country. They're going to see a lot of the people in the administration would see him as, you know, he did the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to happen. But Flynn really wrote a very influential book and influenced foreign policy thinking and the way people view the world, in that there's a coming clash of civilizations between political Islam and Western civilization, and that it is, there's no way of preventing it. It's what the future looks like, and eventually that clash will take place, you know, on our doorsteps. And that is why he really supported Trump, because of his lack or his desire to, you know, really question and have extreme vetting of any immigrant from the Middle East or with Muslim as their declared religion or Islam.
And I read the book. I think it's called Field of Battle, maybe.
It's brilliant.
It's a great book. I mean, you and I have both read it, and we actually praised him as a smart pick early on.
He is a smart pick. The problem with him, I mean, this is a guy that was being considered in the first round of vice president vetting. And so he was Trump gave him top secret security clearance to receive the intelligence briefings during the campaign because he was his top foreign policy advisor and he had the military background. So this is a guy that the FBI had, in the meanwhile, been conducting a private investigation on. The reason why, the allegations about the dossier that was from 4chan, you know, disputing, that was, you know, compiled and then handed off to BuzzFeed.
With the golden showers?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, okay.
So this has been going on, and his Russian ties, and then he also was invited. He's been, though, very anti-Russia when after Crimea. But he was also a correspondent for RT, you know. I guess you could say the biggest
Russia Today
state-sponsored Russian news outlet. And so he was invited to go for their 25th, I believe, anniversary, and he told the military that he was invited and he was going to go. He received a briefing and they allowed him to go. So he goes. Sure enough, the person that invites him, he's seated next to Vladimir Putin. Yet he hadn't really criticized Putin or anything along that lines recently. And so he goes to it. He goes to the ceremony and he comes back. Mm-hmm. He has had a lot of contact with the current Russian U.S. ambassador. He's had lifelong interactions with the guy. And then he became a analyst for RT. And so he was sort of the U.S. military correspondent for their television wing. And yeah, that led some people to question his loyalties, and it triggered the investigation by Director Comey. He was cleared of any wrongdoing, so there were no substantive allegations or verified connections in any way for him to be exploited by the FBI as of January 23rd, as reported by the Washington Post.
Mm-hmm.
But then he called during the transition, December 29th. Or the 28th, that's disputed. He makes a phone call to this Russian ambassador he has a relationship with. And this is the day before or the day of when President Obama expelled all those diplomats and then released new sanctions on Russia.
December 28th. Okay, or 29th. Got it.
And so he is in that, at that time, there's an act called the Logan Act. The Logan Act prevents any individual to act.
Really quick side note. With Obama kicking out the Russian diplomats, why does that matter? Like, couldn't Trump just put them back in place on the 19th?
Now you're getting into, here's the thing, is so Trump is still not president yet.
Right.
You know, well, theoretically, we knew he was going to be president, you know, barring anything major.
Yeah.
But
here's how Bernie could still win.
Right.
Those people were.
Exactly. And so the actual foundation for all of this stems from the DNC hacking and the WikiLeaks. Because it was, you know, some of the code had been used as a program we were aware of that Russia had been developing for, you know, cyber warfare, parts of it, not all of it. The president saw that and then decided with Director Comey that he would investigate any connections between the Trump campaign and Vladimir Putin and the Kremlin. Well, so they're all under surveillance. The call between Flynn and the Russian ambassador recorded, because he was the subject of an investigation. The press reported it was bulk collection. Not true.
Mm-hmm.
The press falsely reported it. I think the battery just shut off.
Yeah.
And so this goes on. Okay. And basically what happened is, because they think that There wasn't. Vladimir Putin didn't react. He didn't respond to the sanctions with retaliatory sanctions. Mm-hmm. That made the President Obama suspicious, and that leaked started another investigation.
Made him think what? That Trump would just undo it all?
They thought that they had anticipated it and then told, you know, had advised them, listen, we're going to be more open. We can remove the sanctions. The reason this is such a politically motivated is because the Logan Act prevents you from conducting official U.S. foreign policy for the executive branch if you are not a member of the executive branch. As president-elect, he was not. And neither was Flynn, even though he hadn't been confirmed. And so he
not
doesn't
yet.
Right.
Member.
And he doesn't even say it. He claimed they didn't discuss the sanctions. That mm-hmm. was a lie. They did. That was the main topic for the call. And that's where it all fell apart. And but they had all this on tape, and Sally Yates conducted an internal review. She had Comey ask about Comey's report. They put one together, had James Clapper review of both of it, head of the NSA that Flynn would be replacing. And then took it to the President Obama, who then decided that they should present it to Trump. And so that's where a lot of the outrage is, that Trump knew about this and sat on it rather than going ahead and just not allowing him to ever be appointed to the head of it.
Hmm.
But in hindsight, they weren't his people. They were the same people investigating his campaign, alleging all these things that turned out to be not true, because Comey's investigation never found any evidence of the dossier.
Like, so he
validated the dossier.
So Trump could have just thought it was all bull.
Well, that's why he did. He said, these aren't my people. They actively were working against my election. Why would I take this report as valid?
Right.
But even when that happens, though, you would think, and maybe this is what happened when Pence asked him. I mean, did somebody go
to
Flynn?
He denied it.
So that's what happened, though, was Pence went to Flynn.
Pence, Spicer, Bannon, Kellyanne Conway. Like and Trump had brought him in with the White House counsel to review it with Sally Yates, or because they hadn't met in person, so it had to be someone else. But they review it. He decides not to do anything on it because, in his view, he was doing his job. But the problem was he lied about it to Pence after that, because then everyone in the administration, Rince Priebus defended him. Sean Spicer defended him, and he lied.
Now they look like fools.
Now they look like fools after he said, no, we didn't discuss sanctions at all. Turns out it's on tape.
Yeah.
And so then they didn't release the tapes, but that got caught as a lie. Then Pence again goes, you can come clean. He gives him the opportunity to come clean. He lies again.
Hmm.
And so then it's smoke. When there's smoke, there's fire. And that's why the Civil War erupted in the administration, because now you have the Vice President of the United States on tape lying to the press.
And someone who is going, and then the role of the vice president, starting with Cheney especially, has greatly increased to a powerful position. And
especially when you're relying on him almost completely in the early stages of your, you know, presidency.
Exactly. And with Trump, I think there is a lot of people who believe, and there could be some validity to this, that Trump just wanted to win. And then he won, and then he was like, I'll just leave the... I mean, in the campaign, he said what? God, it was so funny. Well, Pence is going to do all the presidential stuff, and the reporter goes, what are you going to be in charge of? Oh, you know, making America great again.
Yeah.
The big picture.
I mean, that's the way he's run his organization, but he could afford to.
Right.
You know, I do think that... I know President Obama's on the... You know, he's talked about how... They had only initially planned to meet for like 15 minutes the first time they did, and they ended up staying almost 4 hours or 3 hours. And then he started making sure that his staff was available to the Trump transition team as much as possible so they could come up to speed, because he could just tell that they hadn't anticipated the size of the job.
Right.
But, I mean, it's a different job.
Yeah.
And it isn't a job for somebody... When you're already so skeptically... There's just so much skepticism. There's so many people that are dead set against him, no matter what. He could honestly pursue an entirely liberal agenda, and it wouldn't matter because it was Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Right. At this point, he can do no right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Honestly, he cannot do any right. And then everybody views him as an amateur that's over his head, a fluff buffoon.
Right.
And so this kind of scandal, or the appearance of said scandal, it really threatens to derail his entire presidency. It really does.
Right.
Because once you lose confidence in your competent, or like once you lose a belief that you can handle it, how do you ever gain that back?
Yeah. And
are you talking about like from the American people or
so
I don't know. I don't think many people thought he could handle it in the first place. Yeah.
They did. I mean, a lot of people did.
Obviously he got elected.
But okay, even his supporters, I don't know what Rob has, for instance, has said about this, but like
I don't think he said anything.
Are they looking at this and saying like, oh damn, like what if Trump can't really handle a shit? Like I don't feel like most people aren't paying attention.
Trump won because a lot of white people just said, you know what? I just want change. Or, mm-hmm. you know what? I'm going to give this a try. And so a lot of his support that pushed him over the edge in the Midwest were white people that just couldn't stomach Hillary. And they're like, ah, you know what? I'm going to do it. And right now there's a lot of buyer's remorse.
Yeah. I think even with Republicans, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's also... And Crane has said this before. He said it when it was Romney and Obama in 2012. It's if people feel like you care about them, you know, the 47% comment with Romney.
Oh, yeah. People, that was it.
And like Hillary to Trump, people felt like Trump cared about them. Whereas Hillary, you know,
yeah.
deplorable comment and all that.
He was a populist.
Yeah.
You know, he oddly beat the Democrat in being a man of the people.
Yeah.
Through his messaging.
Certain people, but yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. The low information voter, he definitely did.
Yeah.
But, once you lose the appearance of being able to handle it, it is exceptionally difficult to ever get that back.
Right.
And he just couldn't afford a misstep. And this isn't something he personally did. Like, yes, right. He got the report from the opposition, though. And the whole reason the report existed is because... they believed a lie and were looking to, I mean, truth be told, you could make the argument by authorizing Director Comey's investigation into the Trump campaign. That's election tampering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but that didn't come out before the election, right?
No, that just came out once Comey cleared Flynn of any wrongdoing. So the FBI's formal report clears Flynn of doing anything wrong.
So he got fired for lying to Pence. Is that what you believe?
And that is why he got fired.
Okay.
The FBI cleared him of wrongdoing, who conducted the investigation on January 23rd.
So wait, who recorded the phone call?
Since he was subject to investigation going back during the campaign, he was being watched. Now, it also turns out it was bulk collection.
It was still the FBI later who
they're responsible for conducting it. Yeah.
After they got the phone call after they cleared him.
Oh, absolutely. This has all been cleared, vetted, and said that there's there is the appearance of impropriety. What he did wrong was by lying that the conversation was about economic sanctions and the diplomatic sanctions. And then we don't have the transcript.
Mm-hmm.
So the way it was... said, or we're relying all on off-the-record sources for every news article written because no one knows other than the people listed that made the report, that he could have alluded to the fact that the Trump administration would not be as hostile and more open to relaxing sanctions.
Right.
And what the real fear is, though, the Logan Act, which is if you've ever seen Charlie Wilson's War, mm-hmm. if you've seen that movie, that's what he's basically violating.
Okay.
He's conducting official U.S. foreign policy, not as a representative of the executive branch who's responsible for foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Congress just authorizes funds. The president is commander in chief.
Right.
And he's also like Secretary of State. They conduct formal diplomatic ties. So Charlie Wilson, truth be told, is violating the Logan Act. The thing is, the Logan Act has never been used to charge somebody in the history of its existence. So there was the likelihood of him ever being charged, Flynn or anyone else, very, very low. And they know that as well, especially Yates. That was her decision on the report, is that we probably couldn't even pursue charges because we'd get laughed at.
So what was Flynn fired for? What was the official reason that Trump gave?
Or did he resign?
Lying. Trump asked him in the news conference. Trump asked him for his resignation and he offered it. He got fired for lying twice.
He said that, or
yeah, he told in the press conference he asked him for his resignation.
So by doing that, Trump is admitting to all the Russian stuff.
No, the Russian stuff is off the record. That none of that is true. It's been cleared by the FBI. They conducted
clear that he did no wrongdoing, or that he had conversations with them.
He's supposed to. That was his job.
Okay.
His job was to handle, he talked to 30 different ambassadors.
Okay, that was my next question, is how many different
30 different people, ambassadors.
Right, okay.
I mean, the guy's a general, like, it's been his life in a higher level foreign policy positions. Like, his job for the Trump administration, he was Trump's top foreign policy advisor during the election. He had top secret security clearance granted, but I mean, the FBI could have probably denied that.
Right.
And that never was an issue.
Yeah.
While they were doing an investigation of whether or not he could be exploited by the Russians. The worry is that by telling the Russians this, or by making any type of allusion or, alluding to the fact that they're going to be more amenable to sanctions, he isn't supposed to be doing that technically, even though he never got charged for it because of the Logan Act never being used. That opens him up to blackmail. Because then the Russians, assuming they're aware of the Logan Act, can say, well, we're going to expose that you are conducting official U.S. foreign policy without being a member of the executive branch.
And his answer back to that is like, nice, you know, good luck. Because like, well, nobody's ever been tried with that.
Well, they never even said that.
But I mean, it does seem like kind of flimsy grounds for blackmailing.
Which is
somebody.
Why the FBI cleared him.
Yeah. So is that a real concern that Russia would have blackmailed him?
I know.
Is it?
I don't think it is. Which is why, to me, the actual story is that he lied to Mike Pence because he knew he did something wrong without thinking about it. So he tried to cover his tracks. Pence, Spicer, Bannon. So
if anything, this is more about you lied to me and now I, can't trust you.
It created a scandal where there didn't need to be one.
Right.
Because Charles Krauthammer offered his opinion last night. He said he was doing his job.
Right.
Did he potentially go too far? It's impossible for us to tell because we don't have the transcript.
Yeah.
The person that has the transcript cleared him of any wrongdoing.
This is rule number one in politics. The cover-up and the lies are always worse than whatever you did. If you just tell the truth from the very beginning, then you're going to be fine. In every level of politics, in life, okay? If you have done something wrong, just admit it and say you did it and deal with the consequences.
Makes it worse.
The lying and the drawing out of it, like that's what happened with Clinton. Clinton got impeached. If he had just come out and said, I did stick a cigar inside that fat brunette
this
intern.
Thing.
Right. I diddled her clitoris. And
she has multiple?
Oh, yes. And some women have three or four.
All women could have three or four, and I'd believe it. Like, I don't know any.
That's what I was trying to get.
I don't know any better, yeah.
He's like Alex Jones over here getting woke for the first
time. I have the documents.
He does.
Yeah.
He actually has the documents.
I gave you the documents. I gave you the clitoral documents.
Oh, my.
You are now being... Listen, you're in a different dimension now. We're taking you to interdimensional.
Right, interdimensional.
We are those rare shape-shifting intergalactic folks that have the ability to communicate with higher dimensions.
Interdimensional shape-shifting pedophiles.
Vampiric pedophiles. They're turning the frogs gay.
Yeah.
No.
Putting fluoride in the water.
That's the thing that's been so misconstrued about this is, one, Flynn's responsible for all this. Because he also lied a third time. He gave his son top secret security clearance and told Sean Spicer asked him because his son started tweeting about Pizzagate. And so he goes, and then acting like he had access to additional information.
Right.
Flynn says no.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out that wasn't true.
Mm.
He actually gave top secret security clearance to his son.
So there is something to Pizzagate. After all,
that's
what I'm hearing out of all this.
That isn't what you can hear about it. But
continuing
on
the woke train, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's the third time he lied. And so that's where the war happened in the administration is we're going out defending somebody that is lying to our face. When the vice president gives him the opportunity to correct the record, he lies again.
Right.
And now we're here.
Hold on a minute, though. All of this, like, he's lying to us, all of that's, like, behind closed doors. Why did they ever have to go public with any of this and make a scandal out of it?
Because this got leaked. That's why there's a war on leaks. This should never have made it to the press.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, that's why he came out today and said that he was going to go after low-life leakers. Because this isn't... I mean, he had a phone call with the president of Mexico. He made a good point today in the press conference. He goes, how did the contents of that call get out?
Yeah, that's a great point.
He goes, how did the contents of a call with Argentina get out?
Yeah.
These are official U.S. diplomatic conversations on secure lines, limited people in the room.
People would have flipped their shit if, like, you know, those phone calls have been leaked in the Obama era.
You're undermining your ability to negotiate. And that's, yeah. They asked him today about Mosul and about North Korea. And he goes, listen, folks, while I'm president, I'm never going to tell you about what my response is going to be or what options I'm considering for a military operation, because they will see it coming.
Right.
Why would I tell them what I'm going to do? And then broadcast, be shocked they were ready plan. For it.
Yeah.
And so in this way, like in that way, I thought, yes, he comes off so amateurish in his demeanor, and it's just so different than anything anyone's ever seen. But the logic's sound. Mm-hmm. And I would be livid too. It's when he leaked the fake news back during the campaign. I forgot what it was, to see who he had someone on his on the inside.
Oh, what was it? Was I know what meeting, you're talking about.
Right? His secretary was the only person he let. Yeah, it was about the FBI. It was with the FBI.
Yeah, he was the only.
He was
the only one.
His secretary
is
the only one he let know about it. So he knew the intelligence community was the one leaking it to the press.
Yeah,
and people are shocked that he sees the press as the opposition. And I mean, the deep state, something CNN spends the whole night talking about last night,
right?
And that's straight out of conspiracy 101,
right?
That there's a shadow government that operates everything for real, and that's who he's. I mean, you sound like Alex Jones. There's a counter coup going on inside,
right,
against the globalists.
He sounds less crazy with each passing day.
Isn't
yeah.
it weird?
Alex Jones, like,
it's so weird.
It's gonna get to the point where you're like, well, he's our generation's Walter Cronkite.
Maybe. The-
But I mean, that's the thing, is I couldn't believe my eyes last night. I'm watching CNN talk in depth about the deep. I mean, General Flynn sent his resignation, and within 10 minutes, it was on Twitter and 4chan.
Say that again?
He said he wrote his letter of resignation, offered it to Trump, who requested it, and then turned. The thing is, Trump asked for it, and Kellyanne Conway at the time is going out defending Flynn and saying, you know, that he still has the president's support.
Wow.
Because he was using Flynn and Spicer, or Conway and Spicer, in my opinion, to test which factions the leaks are coming from internally.
That's crazy.
And I can't believe, you can't make phone calls president of the United States without it getting leaked.
Right.
It could either be on the other end, on the other country's side, which very well could be.
But
But I mean, it's
right,
just,
or it's people within the intelligence,
which you know that's what it is,
right?
Because their surveillance, they have access to everything.
So, all right, two questions that I have that come to my mind. Maybe dear leader will have a different take, but like, one, what's Flynn's replacement, and how does that change and go from here? And then two, if it's like this bad, where Trump can't trust anybody in the intelligence community, and there's When you talk about the civil war within the executive branch, is it Trump versus the...
Well, that was... The civil war was because all these people that had trusted Flynn, who they were iffy on because of his background.
Right.
He lied directly to their
face.
But
were other people taking Flynn's side once it was confirmed that he was lying to them?
No. Now it's that settled.
All right. Now everybody's like...
On the same page, except the thing is, the press are going to... I think that Conway may... They may have some suspicions about Kellyanne Conway, because using her as a test to, you know, to give a conflicting message seems very odd.
So what happened? Did she get some sort of access taken away?
She is not technically a member of the administration. She's going, like Mika Brzezinski today said that she wasn't going to be booking her anymore because she's going on and acting as a commentator, as an in-the-know and representative of the administration with no official position. And she's taking a proactive approach to booking herself on these shows.
So she's leaving the administration?
She's not in it.
She was never...
She was originally, though, wasn't she?
No, she never took a job. She on the transition, she did, but never the actual administration.
Oh, okay.
It's like Corey Lewandowski when he got fired.
Right.
But then he was the de facto insider for Trump.
I guess that's something that I just assumed she was part
right.
of the administration.
Everyone does.
Yeah. Interesting. So she's out.
She decided not to take a position in the administration.
Okay.
Because of the commitments, and you know, she'd just spent the last year, first ever woman. She thought she'd be able to do like what Donna Brazile did.
Right.
She ran Gore's campaign Even though they lost, she leveraged it into a multi-million dollar payday with CNN as a commentator.
So why wouldn't you want somebody who has insider contacts? And obviously, Kellyanne Conway is a very sharp person.
Right, but it's the Trump. They don't want.
They don't want a pro Trump voice.
And the way her demeanor,
she's
they
too
think
effective.
She's an info babe.
She's too effective.
Right.
Right. Okay. Got it.
Yeah, they despise her. Like, and so Mika Brzezinski today said, you know, she's banning her from her show.
Interesting. Well, big loss.
Right.
60,000 people won't see you.
Literally, if you wanted to develop like cloaking technology, you could just run CNN or MSNBC on whatever thing you were trying to hide. It'd be the most effective way to do it. But you know, I don't want to sound too pro Trump, but I read everything Chris did, and I said I still haven't. And then I was like, wait a second, I remember there was a report. So I go on Washington Post. Yeah, Director Comey clears him of any wrongdoing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting.
And then the tapes aren't released, so there's just intentional smoke and mirrors. And the reports were conducted by the same people investigating his damn campaign off of fake info.
All right, so let's tie this all together. Tell me what to think about all this.
I mean, what to think? If you really think that Vladimir Putin is such a mastermind that he can control the outcome of the U.S. election, and that there's anything to exploit the head of... I mean, I wrote a bunch of questions in chat. You know, what could the Russians really exploit the head of the NSA for? Mm-hmm. What could it be? Could we do surveillance for them in areas they don't have access? Could they ask for secrets on people? I mean, could they ask to share intelligence? I mean, there are things you could ask. There are ways to exploit it. But it isn't like there is a way for the infrastructure side of the intelligence community to really influence president on policy and affect outcomes in the United States.
Yeah.
And all of this you should be suspicious of, because we're not even sure who actually did the hacking from the DNC that led to all of this. The assumption is it was the Russians.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's because there was some crossover in the code they found, but someone intentionally changed the language setting to Russian. Mm-hmm. What idiot hacker?
Right.
You think he's dumb enough? Like, oh, hold on. Let me make it so I can turn...
I need to be able to
change
the
settings so I can go in and they have a way to track me.
Yeah.
That's a misdirect to me.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you're the worst hacker in the world, which you can't be because you hacked one of the most secure organizations.
Was that Stuxnet virus?
Exactly.
Where they found like parts in the code that reference some Bible verse from the Torah.
Correct.
And so people were like, oh, well, that's Israel.
Israeli operation.
I don't know. To me, I was skeptical of that. Like, how stupid would you have to be? Like, oh, let's put something from our holy book in here.
Right.
And they'll never know the Jews did it. Like, really?
Right.
Like, what's the best way to set someone up?
It just is amazing to me that, like, somebody did some Trump fanfic and the so-called intelligence agencies fell for that.
Yeah, that's
4chan. It originated on Poll, the Poll board. And that was, that guy included it as something that he was handing over to the person that was supposed to be president.
Right. Greg, were you the one who sent, like, in chat or something one day, the poll board that had the thing about how Trump is really, like, a time traveler?
Oh, yeah.
And he determined that, like, this is the only way he's got to do to save America.
Yeah.
And, like,
he's from the future. Gosh. And that was actual fan fiction on there. But, I mean, that's the kind of content that's on there. And that's what the researcher cited in the dossier.
Hilarious.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's the thing. I question it. I'm sorry. Like, Bittner called me a Trumpkin today.
Oh, boy.
And I just thought, you know what? I'm going to actually read it all. And if I can't find a smoking gun, then this groundswell and the backlash, because now all the criticism is, why did he sit on 11 days? Well, because his team wasn't in place to conduct his own internal review.
Right.
Why would you trust the opposition who was investigating you and making all these allegations?
Yeah, it makes sense.
I can't disagree.
And then he does a press conference today, which will go down in history as one of the most epic press conferences, and
I need to watch it.
Thoroughly crushing demonstrations of how little access or how his views of anyone like CNN or MSNBC or NBC, he literally thinks they're worse than whores.
So sometimes I'll see the TVs at the gym and it'll be CNN and Fox News. And so Fox News, it was like the 5 o'clock hour, whatever's on then. And they showed the people that he's called on the last three, that Spicer has called on the last three times. And it was like Town Hall, CBN, which is Christian Broadcasting Network, Fox News, Red State. Red State. And like, he's not calling on any of the mainstream media at all. And it's just an FU.
Well, it was so funny to watch him grovel today. Like, he's sitting there telling the CNN reporter that's asking the question, "You guys are terrible. You're terrible. Your tone is wrong. Everything about you is wrong." And the reporter has to lead with, "We don't hate you. I don't hate you." And I just thought, this is the level of absurdity America is not ready for. You know, there is just no one is ready for this type of combative environment. But when the press has an approval rating lower than Congress, or, you know, that rivals it, that's his best bet.
Right. Mm-hmm. What was the one that was crazy today that like would have gotten Bush impeached that he said today?
Which one?
An African-American reporter. She's not even actually a reporter, but she was included. They gave her, because they're pretty liberal about who they actually let in.
Right.
And who they ask, take questions
Alex
from.
Alex Jones is there now, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But, Cronkite. But so she asked a question. He was talking about his plan to fix the urban communities and the urban revitalization executive order he was going to be releasing later today.
Mm-hmm.
And so she goes, "Will you be including the Congressional Black Caucus?" And he had a meeting scheduled with Representative Cummings, and he sits there and says, "Now, he canceled the meeting, or we were supposed to meet. I don't know what happened. My guess is Chuck Schumer told him that he was not allowed to." And then she goes, "Well, are you going to include, do you want to include the Congressional Black Caucus?" And he goes, "Do you know them?
Oh,
are they
God.
Your friends?"
Oh.
And he goes, "Let's set up a meeting."
Oh my God.
"Let's do it." And I just, Creighton's one that alerted me to it. And I immediately saw it. I was like,
wow,
that is the most incredible, you know. And he'd already been questioned earlier for being anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
They questioned him earlier about being
conference?
Racist. Yeah. Racist. And oh yeah. And his supporters, you know, what does he think about his racist support? And, you know, he said, "I'm the least racist person on the planet." No joke. 30 minutes later, you know, the congressman assumes that because she's black and writes for a primarily African American,
you know, right?
Yeah, he's like, "Do you know them? Are they your friends?"
So,
and she goes, "Well, I'm sure they're watching right now, and I know some of them." And so he goes, "Let's set up a meeting."
So you hilarious. Do know them.
I kind of thought that's the only way you can respond at that point. And she, so then there, that's that narrative, you know, how racist and offensive that was. I'll defend the girl. The girl goes out on Twitter and says, there was no intent in that. He was legitimately asking me to set up the meeting. And so the meeting's on the books.
Yep.
Like, it just reminds me of, like, the first, like, three or four seasons of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. You remember how they're like, "Well, like, no, I mean, like there was an episode where they did that. Like, I have black friends, like,
oh, yeah."
And they go out and try and make black friends. And then he's like, "You know, you know her, right? Like, when you say sister, do you mean your actual sister?" And then, like, it turns out she is the black guy's sister and
yeah.
stuff. It's like watching an episode of that,
yeah,
but it's the president.
It's farce turned into real life.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, though, I would be shocked if that were what his intent was.
Right.
I would be stunned if it's like, "Oh, you know, you black people, you all know each other."
Do you think he just...
I think the
clueless.
Way he said it. No, I mean, like, she asked, and he knows she's not an actual reporter because
mm-hmm.
she's not there in the capacity as like a news outlet. And so, you know, sometimes someone from a policy institute will ask.
Yeah.
And so someone asks, and he's, you know, "I'd love to include the Black Caucus. I had a meeting set up with, you know, Representative Cummings, and I don't know what happened." Yada, yada. She goes, "Well, then would you include him?" So she says, "Would you include him?" And he goes, "Are they your friends? Do you know them?"
Such
but
an old
when you,
man.
But when you're her and you're saying, "Would you include them?" It almost sounds like, and you're for a policy institute, you could almost imply that she's asking on their behalf.
Right.
It
like there's enough plausible deniability.
It is very much like, what you'd expect a 70-year-old white guy to say. It fits. Like, I don't think Trump is any more racist than your average, like, 70-year-old white guy.
Right.
Like, I don't think he gives a shit.
He says things that are very much received as racist, but it is not at all how it's ignorance on his part, or his inability to accommodate.
I won't say who it was for the sake of anonymity, but somebody I know,
Harry
who,
Price,
no, is in their like late 80s, 90s, right?
Roger Paxton
was telling me about, it was either like their mailman or their tax man, one of the two, but, you know, said something about, oh, and the mailman, Larry, you know, he was real nice for a colored fellow. Like straight up said that to me. And it was just like one of those things where I'm like, well, it's not the most racist thing I've heard from somebody your generation, but
it's
like
not the least.
Like,
it's
he's so rare a to nice hear that. Guy for a colored person. Like, okay, that's great.
No, I know. I don't know. It struck me as funny because that won't make the news.
Yeah.
And only in the Trump administration would a comment like that not set people off to the point of, you know, wanting to send Black Panthers on the White House lawn.
We're right. used to it now. Like,
well, he just does so many things that are even more newsworthy that gets lost in the fray.
Right.
It's amazing. But you really ought to read the transcript because it is... He starts out by talking about all the amazing things he's accomplished already.
Because, typical, you know, Trump
the narrative
fashion.
Is that he is, you know, because there's been a lot of stalling on his appointments,
right?
And the Republicans balking at taking ownership of Obamacare, that it's slow developing, and, you know, he's wasting time,
right?
So he comes out and talks about all the great work he's doing. He's fulfilling every campaign promise. You know, he's negotiating contracts in all the jobs that are staying here and the 10,000 jobs by General Motors and just on and on. And I thought, this is... And then he specifically says, I'm here to talk to the American people, but I'm glad the media is present. It's an honor to be in the same room. And I just thought, what epic shit posting.
It's an honor for you to be in the same room with me. Is that
no,
sort of what
he said?
Saying?
You know, it's an honor to be in the room or to have you here. And so, but it was clear he was talking to directly to the American people, and they were there because he allowed it.
That's amazing.
Just is everything you just want to troll if, you know, you weren't the leader of the free world.
Right.
You think you might handle yourself a bit differently, but he just goes ahead and rides it out.
All right. Well, final thoughts on this issue, Greg.
Or do you guys?
What I mean, who's replacing Flynn?
Adam Hayward, who's the head of CENTCOM, which is the position Mattis had before in the Obama administration.
Okay, and what's
he
his?
He's straight out of Central Casting for a, you know, as a Marine, shaved head, blue eye, like he could be a Hitler youth.
Todd Young,
but even like more, like he could be RoboCop. This guy could be that's his look,
right?
Yeah, Adam Hayward, and so he's a distinguished. He's not controversial whatsoever. And the whole thing was because the whole reason the press conference happened is because Trump's labor secretary had to pull out. He offered his...
I saw that. Why was that?
Because on the right, he was criticized in the past for supporting immigration. So he wasn't going to he wasn't going to pass advising consent. And on the left, he was criticized because he doesn't support minimum wage. So he had warring factions on both sides.
Oh, it was Hardy's.
Puzzer. Yeah.
Hardy's guy, yeah.
All right, well, I just Googled Adam Hayward, and he looks to be an African-American linebacker from the Redskins. So,
I'll show you the guy that's the one that's the new.
Adam Hayward doesn't seem to be the right...
General Adam Hayward.
Okay, well, let me try that then.
Because he's not a real well-known guy, or he doesn't have a real high... Here he is.
Another general, huh?
Or sorry, Robert Harward.
Oh, Robert. Well, that's a completely... Oh, wow.
Is he not RoboCop?
This guy looks like some sort of fitness model in his 50s. Some sort of weird fitness model.
Yep.
Like when you think...
It's about what I was envisioning, yeah.
Yeah.
Weird.
Oh,
sorry,
he's like sheriff material.
Yeah.
Like local county sheriff.
Exactly,
stuff.
Yeah. Mad Max.
I actually met... So when I, back when I was still involved with politics, I was, you know, trying to be proactive and learn about people running for local offices. And like, it reminds me of somebody like that who was running for sheriff in the local county race.
Are you all right, buddy?
Yeah, no, I'm listening.
Yeah. I mean, do you guys,
yeah, so
the libertarian element in all this, it's good when information is open and available to
right.
us. Right? The thing is, even if you think Trump is, you know, a puppet of the Russians, we still don't have the information.
Right.
So it's still based, there's only a limited number of people that have seen it.
Right.
So yes, we need less of a surveillance state. Ideally, Seth's right. It'd be awesome if we could shut down the intelligence community and just be like, no problem anymore.
Mm-hmm. I told you my wet dream for the DEA, didn't I?
Well,
fire everybody in there, go around to every nearby McDonald's, make them take a whiz quiz. The ones that fail it, you hire them at $20 an hour, replace their arsenal with water pistols, and that's your drug enforcement agency. It's perfect. It's the way to end prohibition overnight.
Love it.
Yeah, I have trouble seeing it getting signed into law, but yeah.
Well, I mean,
you don't need law.
Yeah,
that's fuck an executive.
Law. Like, do as much as you can through an executive order and make that happen. Like, if their arsenal is water pistols and it's every pothead, they'll just be glad they're making $20 an hour, man.
Yeah,
that's a living wage.
Yeah,
five above.
Well, I'm out of gas, so let's wrap this thing up.
Yeah. I hope I represented it.
You did, yeah.
So
you have great show notes, and we're putting show notes on these posts. So if you want to see a timeline of everything, Greg has written out great show notes. So go check that out.
The only question I had for the last bit was, I don't understand what's Trump's like. With the intelligence agency, if he doesn't trust them at all, like, how is that going to quote unquote work?
What do you mean?
Like,
he has people he trusts. Dan Coats is someone he trusts, is honest. You know, his appointees he trusts. There is, though, very much a lot of the individuals that are in the intelligence communities have been operating under the assumption that the world works like X for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, anytime that there looks to be a major shift in U.S. policy, you know, continuing support. Mattis just gave a speech yesterday saying that NATO should prepare for a drawback in U.S. financial support, and they should prepare for a world where the United States are not going to just offer a blank check to pay for your sons and daughters to be protected. And I thought it was wonderful.
Right.
But that is a radical shift.
I'd love to see the effect that has on those socialist countries in Europe. Yeah.
Well, yeah. No wonder they can
when they don't have to pay for their own defense. Harmony. Yeah.
And so it is a radical shift in what everyone has been planning. You know, the global worldview where the Hague and the international courts would play a more, you know, major role as we go forward and become a more global society. This is a rather radical rejection of that in Europe, in the United States. And it's being carried out by outsiders who have been deemed so irrelevant, there's no reason, they don't really have leverage over them.
Mm.
Because there was no reason to ever suspect they would have power.
What's her name in France?
Le Pen.
Le Pen, yeah.
Le Pen. Nigel Farage.
Yeah.
Did you hear that he's been like, they've tried to kill him several times?
Yeah.
The all-knowing they tried to kill him.
Illuminati.
They, as I do my Alex Jones little finger wave. If you watch him on the Rogan podcast, he does this like air quotes thingy, but he goes like this.
It's the most Aspie air quotes possible. Yeah, it's not even.
He's so woke, his fingers won't work in tandem. They work separate.
It literally, it's like.
Just kind of wagging them in your vague direction.
He just like jazz hands it. He takes the two fingers and he kind of weight. Like, imagine that you're swimming your legs. Like, you're kicking your legs.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And that's his air quotes. It's so funny. You have to watch the video of the Rogan podcast.
If you haven't watched that, there's something wrong with you.
It is. Basic gestalt.
I can't even. We talked. I go, I can't get over our society. When we avoided anything Alex Jones related when we started.
That was what the big fight was over with between Creighton and Galt after episode 20 something.
And now people.
Because we weren't going to talk conspiracies or fluoride in the water or any of that.
And now he's got White House press credentials. It's our world has changed and it's so much for the better because that podcast and that show, a Republican precinct committee chairman messages me that he took a half day from work so he could have the morning open so his wife and kids would be gone so he could just sit and enjoy it while he rewatched it.
Wow.
He thought it was that good of entertainment.
I've probably watched it a total of twice and listened to it a total of twice because it is so full of crazy. It's amazing. I've
never seen anything like it.
Right.
Or something so addicting.
He is. I told you.
You're so right.
You were like, I'm not getting in on this. I'm not. You were skeptical. You were like, oh great. Now you're full woke.
I and it's not like he doesn't take some creative license by filling in the gaps on some facts. And it's not that, you know, it's not that the sources don't exist or whatever. Right. It's just that he's making a leap to fill in, you know, where the absence of information is.
Yes.
But anything he said, you know, that guy has an encyclopedic memory. When he quoted a subclause of a legislation.
It was U.S. Code 13735BB, and they looked it up, and he was like dead
word
on.
For word.
Like here's the thing with Jones. You listen, and it's super entertaining and funny. And I haven't listened in 2 or 3 weeks, but you have to fact check him, and you go, okay, he's stretching it. But sometimes,
yeah, when he tells you to look it up,
you go,
you can trust
ooh,
it.
Ooh, okay, wow. There's some information here, but that's 25% of the time.
Yeah. And there was he admitted where, you know, they asked him, was there something, a chance, or, you know, where you regret supporting something? And he talked about the Y2K.
Right.
You know, that he exploited that and didn't really believe it. And, you know, that's something he wishes he could take back.
Right.
Because he went ahead and went along with it after some pressure to, you know, to promote advertisers selling preparation gear.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he will admit where he's, you know, a lot of those guys will just blanket refuse that they've ever been wrong.
Yeah. January 1st, never was a better time to buy a generator.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So final thoughts for this episode.
It's not totally libertarian relevant, so I kind of feel, but I feel like it's, you know, investigation of what happened.
Open floor.
Yeah. It's more just current events. I don't know. It's educational. I appreciate Greg's insight into all of it. I don't know. Because it does seem like, I don't know. It seems like he doesn't have his shit together, but then Greg's always saying that he does.
I think the job is over his head.
Yeah.
And but he's been somebody that's relied on great people. It's just he's never had to operate where great people are subject to Senate confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
Because these organizations are extremely competent people, and he makes the major, you know, major calls.
So long term, is this where you see him getting tired of having to work through Congress and all that and just making a compromise to get something passed? So you see him as being a one term? Does he even run again in 4 years?
I really wonder about that because I feel like he is now where Obama was, and he's just went,
right,
I hate all of this.
And he doesn't keep that in.
I don't think that his ego will allow him to not run again.
Like Obama got there, what, like year 5 or 6?
The first 100 days.
Yeah.
Oh, that soon?
Oh, he spent his capital on Obamacare getting it through.
Yeah.
And he had none. He just had to sit and wait.
So I feel like Trump is definitely, I've always felt that Trump is a fraud. Like, he's definitely a successful person, but so much of his business is just his name. It is licensing his name. It's not actual work. Like, it hasn't been building buildings, you know, and he's not had to manage that kind of stuff for the last 10, 15 years.
Well, yeah, he's not a project manager.
No.
He's an organizer kind of talent.
Right. And so I just think that maybe, I think 1995 Trump may have been more successful at what he wants to achieve, but I think 70-year-old Trump sits in front of the TV and bitches at people and tweets out what news he's watching, and he's just getting, I think that he is now swimming in his own negative press to a level that when he was out on the campaign trail, he could go out and fight.
Yeah.
Okay. But he's now sitting in the Oval Office stewing, and he doesn't have the ability to go out and campaign. He's got to work. And so when you're on the campaign trail, you're out there manipulating the press. But he's now in a situation where he doesn't have the luxury of manipulating the media cycle like he did. He's a victim of it. And I think he's finally going to get sunk under that wave here in the next in the next year, and he's just going to be completely paralyzed. He's not going to really get anything done because of his inexperience, and I think he'll either not run for re-election or he'll run for re-election, but I would count on him running for re-election and have a very strong primary challenger in someone, whoever that might be, but someone will try to challenge him. And I can't say whether or not he'd be re-elected, but it's not looking good at this point, but we're only 20 days in. So
who do you think the Democrats bring to the table in
Hillary is apparently running again.
Yeah.
Is that
all signs?
I heard something about that. Is that like she said that, or is it just
the
grapevine?
All signs point to her running again. She never flat out denied that she was running for mayor of New York against someone who was Bill de Blasio was a faithful supporter of her, and she never straight out quashed those rumors. The Clinton Foundation is still shuttered, which is a huge part of. I mean, they could easily reopen it and nobody would care.
Mm-hmm.
She continues to tweet out things that seem relevant. Like, she's just not going off into the sunset like Al Gore did, for instance.
President Obama just moved down the street.
Right.
And so if you believe the message boards, he's running the deep state.
Right. So I could see her running again, and I don't know who the challenge. Cory Booker's always mentioned, but we'll see. I feel like Cory Booker's kind of on the Chris Christie path.
Senators are rarely good.
Yes.
They're like President Obama. They're too cerebral and methodical. They're not really leaders. They're debaters.
It's way too early to start talking about 2020, though, so let's not get everybody depressed.
I would love just to see Hillary get beat again.
Right.
Like, November 8th, like, late at night. Because I was so prepared for a Clinton win. And then when she lost, just the joy of liberal tears. If I can have that again.
It was great.
If I could drink some more tears.
Oh,
I have a sneaking suspicion. This is a rock and a hard place. You have an unstoppable force.
Like Biden, I could see, maybe.
Oh, I think Jill would kill him. Because she didn't necessarily want him to even take the... You know, she made him take vice president because she didn't want him gone all the time. Secretary of State.
He'd be
same age as Trump.
Same age as Trump and same age as Hillary, but still, that's too old.
Do you think Bernie runs again in 4 years?
No.
Yes, but it'll be like Ron Paul. He won't be running for president. He'll be running to
sell books. He'd, you know, run regardless.
Fix the corruption. Vote for Hillary.
Right.
You know.
Which house are you tweeting this from?
What?
I said, which house are you tweeting this
beach
from?
House?
While you preach to me about greed?
Yeah. I mean, to me, though, this is going to be fun to watch because... The one advantage Trump has is the press's approval rating. I think like we're anomalies. We know that Jake Tapper does he's still slightly more. He has such long-standing relationships with people that are of the status quo,
right?
That he's more sympathetic to them
more than Alex Jones, yes.
Right? But he does a very good job at trying to get to the bottom of things,
right?
However, I don't meet people that have trust in the press whatsoever. Like, I keep hearing they are enjoying their misery.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a sneaking feeling that he is just going to bury them until they cave to his will.
Yeah.
Or at least get off his case. And if they get off the case, then all of a sudden you have a Republican president, Republican House, and a Republican Senate with a legislative agenda without all the fear of blowback.
I don't know, man. That echo chamber is real strong.
It is. It's only in liberal circles. I just haven't met... Like, the liberals are outraged.
Mm-hmm.
I don't hear that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then establishment Republicans are outraged.
Right.
Who could act like this?
Who cares?
That was the entire... That mirrors the exact development of the election.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people just like his antics.
Right. He's entertaining.
Yeah. Can you imagine what would we even be talking about if it was Hillary? Her bowel movements?
Her imminent death, hopefully.
Yeah. I mean, like, this is great. Like, today's press conference, I thought the blowback was going to be catastrophic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because I had to catch myself. I'd only been in echo chamber and then some of our more liberal friends.
Right.
And so I hadn't researched this. And I'm like, you know what? I got to. I gotta get to the bottom of this. And right. I'm like, this is all fluff and this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
He's actually right. Yes, he says it like someone you hate, but it's valid rebuttals. Is it proof? There's no proof. But his argument is valid just as much as their innuendos.
Right.
Except the FBI cleared Flynn.
Mm-hmm.
That's fact.
All right. Time to say our goodbyes. So at the end, Seth, I've made you an admin of the We Are Libertarians page, which is up to 75,000 likes. So I think we're just cycling through. We're hopefully going to be at 100,000 here in the next month or so.
My God, I hope someone tries to rip us off again.
I know. If you want to name your page We Are Libertarians and then give it to me, I'm all for that.
Chris Spangle is known for cucking.
Oh, I'm an expert at cucking. I've got a long history of cuck.
I saw his video where he was explaining what happened, Charles, whatever.
Bro.
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't buy it.
No.
Like, I could just tell he was lying.
Yeah.
Like, no.
Well, that's your opinion. I gave his side of the story.
He's got the kind of face that I would violate the NAP for. That's my personal opinion. But I'm loosely tied to the NIP.
Yeah.
So apparently one of our friends said in Orlando his pitch to become chair was that he had big biceps, and he talked to about his biceps for 20 minutes.
My God, he's like the Donald Trump of libertarians.
Oh, you should read his website.
Scree! All right. I've made you an admin of our page, so yeah. as you go out to Thank ISFCL, you. please update the Facebook Live, take some photos and post them.
All right.
Yeah.
I know.
Make everyone around you listen on the bus ride.
Yes.
I know.
Hey, guys, I was just on this podcast.
Take a Bluetooth speaker and then just connect.
My voice doesn't sound like that.
No, okay.
I've been accused once or twice by certain people of having a gay lisp.
No.
You don't believe it?
No, if I met you, I would know that you were probably of that persuasion.
Yeah.
But that's because I'm perceptive. I think that if you were at most libertarian events, they would not be able to tell.
I think from when I met you to now, you're way less gay. Which is odd because you were in the closet then.
Back then,
the first
time
we met to now, you are way less gay.
I was more gay four years ago, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Okay, that's interesting.
I don't know, man.
I've heard the opposite from most other people, but
I don't pick that up at all. Whereas I would have maybe thought it before.
Really?
I'm just gonna go out on a limb that
it's interesting.
Seth's probably more gay with all the dicks that he's putting in his mouth. And
well,
until now,
no. Yeah, thank you, Pence.
Oh my, so much fun
to settle for cucumbers instead.
Well,
that was
going vegan
in your asshole. All right, Greg,
I'm good. We can wrap it up so you can get some sleep.
All right,
big day.
Seth, thank you for joining us.
Yeah,
final thoughts?
No, I don't think so. I'm heading off to a bus in a couple hours to go straight to the heart of Mordor, so
all right.
I'll do whatever reporting I can.
My final thought is the reason I'm so worn out is that my grandmother's funeral was today, and my grandmother passed away. I have had all four grandparents, and then I lost my grandpa, my mom's dad, in 1997, and then I lost my mom's mom this past weekend, and my dad's parents are both alive in St. Augustine, Florida. Again, if you're ever in St. Augustine, stop by the scenic cruise and say hi to Larry. People do that, and it's so funny.
That's great. I kind of want to do it.
Yeah. And John Yowen, I think he listens sometimes. He lives in Jacksonville. I'm trying to get him to go do it. But my grandmother was 89, and she was born in 1928, and she was raised in the heart of the Depression, and she was born in July. When was the crash? It was
Black Friday, so
I don't know when it was, but obviously she was born in the heart of the crash, and she was born to a tradesman, and he was a worker for the WPA, and that's how they survived the 30s. And she was the daughter of six, and she was the youngest. And I was recently having a conversation with her, and she was just telling me all of this because I wanted to know, you know, what was your family like during that era? And she said, well, the only thing that she really could talk about was the food. And I said, so what did you eat? And she said, well, potato soup. We pretty much had potato soup every meal in the 30s. And I said, what was in the potato soup? Well, it was water and potatoes. And sometimes my mother would go down and she would basically beg for some chicken feet from the butcher, and he would take pity on her and give them butcher, you know, and so we would have a little stock in our potato soup. But generally, that's all it was, because her dad's WPA salary didn't feed their need. And I was blown away by that, because here I am, 30 years old, 33 years old, sitting next to my 89-year-old grandmother, and that's the extent of, like, think about that time span, okay? We're talking about someone who, when she was a child, was living in downtown Indianapolis in the Fountain Square area and was using an outhouse and was so poor for a decade that every meal, almost every meal, was a potato soup made of water and potatoes. And I feel poor because I live in an apartment and have a lot of nice things and way too much stuff. And we just don't have any concept of poverty in this country, even across two generations.
Yeah.
You know, we've lost that spirit. My grandmother was a wonderful person. That being raised in that time gave her a sense of thrift, was truly a, just a very, she was a good Catholic woman. And she was, I don't think I ever heard my grandmother say anything negative about anyone. She never overspent. She, you know, growing up, I had one set of grandparents who spent all their money, and I had one set of grandparents who saved all their money. And it was a striking comparison, and I didn't really, like, I was like, oh, these people are poor. But they were far richer because they focused on family, and it was, I learned a lot of lessons from that, and I think that growing up in scarcity was very good for her and impactful on me, because more isn't better. And it taught her what was actually important, and she was an incredibly devoted family woman. And I think that that is a lesson that I just want to impart on our listeners, because I think that's an interesting fact, because if you've got your grandparents, she was the last of the greatest generation in our family. Her husband, John, was a Marine paratrooper sharpshooter in World War II and was first in. I mean, if you were at that level, you were first in. And he was first in Okinawa and saw some pretty awful things. And when they met, and she was a very shy woman. She hated today. Let me tell you something. My grandmother, her instructions for her funeral was that no one was to make a fuss about her. And she knew that everybody wanted a funeral, but they were not to talk about her, because she didn't want people to make it all about her, which is a very sweet thing. But it's hard to...
Old-fashioned.
It is. And it's hard to not talk about somebody like that who has that kind of humility. Obviously, that skipped me, but she was just a very devoted family person, especially to my grandfather. He passed away 20 years ago. There was never a thought about anyone else or dating or any of that. She was married until she passed away, and that is the best part. So, you know, she was 89. She went peacefully in her sleep. We had a long goodbye. It was the best case scenario in that, and the happiest part is that she's not in pain and that she is back together with my grandfather, John, which is a great, great thing for our family. But if you've got people in your family that are of that generation, or even the baby boomers, I guess we can try and talk to baby boomers and connect to them. But, you know,
they were the path to descent.
Knowing that my grandmother had limited time, I made a point of going and seeing her a lot. And that conversation, I thought, just, that was about 2 months ago, and that was super impactful for me. And so if your grandparents or older members of your family are still alive, please do yourself a favor, do them a favor, and go leave your phone in the car and have a nice conversation with them and learn about your family history, because it can help you appreciate where we're at as a country and where we've, how far we've come. So
that's a good that's a good point.
Yep. Potatoes and water for right. a decade.
What's actually necessary?
So just walk away with that. And the next time you feel poor, remember how much you actually have and how far you have come as a result of the people in your past that struggled to get us to this point. Thanksgiving Day to me is never about eating food. To me, it is about remembering all of the people in my past and in our country's past that have made incredible sacrifices with so few comforts to get us to this point in our society. And
not so you could complain about it not being gluten-free stuffing.
I've got to really examine my life, and I went, you know, today was impactful for me because as I sit and I think about my grandmother, what was important to her was her family, and it was never money, and it was never material belongings. She lived in an apartment no bigger than this her entire life. She raised four kids. She was a great grandmother. She had very little, and she's meaning she spent very little. But are we really happier than the people who ate water and potatoes for every meal? Like, we have so much abundance, and we place so much on, you know, stupid shit like an iPhone. And the culture that we live in, when I really think about the grandparents and the older aunts and uncles that I had growing up, I remember feeling in the 80s and early 90s so much different than I feel now because I was around those people. And they just seemed to have better human connection and a better life, and they were poorer. And I just feel like we're building a shit life for ourselves, for our country, for the future generations. And I don't necessarily, a lot of what we talk about here is how do we live the best life?
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think that what we're building as a society is working.
No.
At all. It is not personally fulfilling to us.
I compare it politically. Like, progressivism is a march towards perfection, and that's, perfection isn't of this world.
No.
And it doesn't exist.
It's, every part of our culture is sick.
Yep.
Our food system is sick. Our monetary system is sick. Our government is sick. Every our culture is sick. Every part of our world is sick. And we've got to start really thinking deeply on this program and in our own lives about how did we get here and what are the values that matter to us? Because Virginia Porter was the type of person that lived and existed in this society, and she always had enough, and it was because of her attitude and her priorities and her values. And
that were, you know, a result of experiencing scarcity.
Absolutely.
You know, when you
living through the Great Depression and World War II, being married to someone who was deeply scarred by the Pacific Theater.
They actually watched, they were part of war. They didn't watch, or they weren't banned from watching caskets come home on TV.
Yeah.
You know, it has theme music in the United States now.
Yep.
There, they went and defeated Nazism.
We treat those soldiers like punchlines. They're avatars that we flash on the screen during a football game, and then all phonily, we fakely go, oh, these heroes. But we have no fucking idea what the costs are. We have no realities of their sacrifice. We have separated ourselves from the humanity. And when I look at my grandparents, John and Virginia, who grew up in the Great Depression and in World War II, they bathed in the reality of suffering and humanity, and they were the ones who built a life that was good and built on things that actually mattered, human values. And, man, I don't live that way. I don't live the life that she has had, you know? And I'm not the crazy one. I mean, I'm the crazy one. I mean, not her. So I know I'm ranting a little bit, but it's just something that's been on my mind since I had that conversation with her. And it really, when you sit and someone's life is examined and celebrated and the good qualities of their life bubble to the surface, you just go, wow, this person who was so radically different than the culture was so much happier than the rest of us, you know, and why. And so
you become a decadent culture.
Yep.
And that's like a hunger that never stops growing. There is no satiating it, you know. It
never.
Just grows and grows and grows.
I do think it depends a lot on your perception of things. Because, I mean, I was just thinking the other day of like, of any time period, is there any time I would rather live in, you know, historically?
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't think of one. Like, even if I'd been born 10 years earlier, like, I feel like I wouldn't have wanted that. Like, I get what you're saying and all, and I'm not trying to...
I'm not advocating for a Great Depression.
No, he's
right.
About
like
the
I'm saying,
what
yeah,
a society considers
and that those
important.
Values were gained out of like that hardship and mm-hmm. that suffering that a lot of people haven't right. had to go through. I think
we've eliminated scarcity, basically.
I think you can. I think it is still possible to get that perspective without having to go through all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe it won't be to the same level, but I mean, are you just talking it kind of reminds me of like, I mean, it sounds like almost like a baby boomer spiel about how like everyone's plugged into social media these days and they don't like
fucking dare you.
And I'm comparing his words to
you're comparing him to a baby.
I don't quite know what I mean because I haven't fully processed it. I just these are the thoughts and ramblings of a long emotional day, but
yeah.
We don't even ask what's important.
Yeah.
We just get swept up into waves
like,
before
to,
you know,
to
it's like
me,
we lost the question of what's the compass in life.
Now this is a personal This is more of a personal thing, maybe, but taking time away from, you know, like my nieces were here today, and I saw them. They're 3 and 1, and they're the most adorable human beings on the planet. Sorry, Seth, but
it's okay.
You came in third, but.
Jeff's a close fourth.
I didn't want to go to Boston to see them over the last 2 years because it would interrupt my schedule, my work, the things that I find important, like my work, my this podcast, things mm-hmm. like that. And I'm going next month to see them, but it took 2 years of arm pulling to do it. Why is making sure that we put out another episode or spending $200 on a cell phone bill or $300 here on frivolous shit I don't need, why is that more important than the experience of when my niece runs around the corner and lights up and screams with joy that she sees me? Why is that less important to me than making sure that I don't miss a day of work?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I do it because I'm so like, I've got to make money because I've got to pay for all this dumb shit I don't need,
yeah.
You know, and I don't feel like I'm that out of whack of what most people live.
No, there aren't reference points.
Right.
Like, so you just, it never occurs to you until right. like you have these big moving things in your life.
Right.
That, like reprioritize.
Right. So I think that's kind of what I'm saying is where are my priorities at? What do I find important? What do I find valuable? And what do we as a society emphasize? Because so much of what we choose as personal priorities are really about what our society finds important, you know, and especially the people that we surround ourselves with. But
and it's really just mimic.
Mm-hmm.
You're just mimicking, you know.
Yeah.
Most of the time, people have never actually sat down and thought about what they want.
Yeah.
They're just mimicking the behavior of what others want and then following suit.
I will say, like, I think it was a couple episodes back when you guys were talking about, you know, you had I think, Spangle, you had mentioned it in reference to, like, writing a suicide note.
Mm-hmm.
And Greg was saying, like, write your eulogy.
Right.
You know, like, because that got me thinking about that sort of thing.
You need those things to right. frame things.
Yeah.
And, like, I, you know, had to do a factory reset on my phone, like, a week or two ago because I was having tech issues with it. And it was all clean, like no apps. And I just didn't install Facebook or Messenger. Haven't had it on there for like 2 weeks and it's felt great.
Yeah.
Like it's no been stress. Great. Yeah.
I spend way too much time with my phone in my hand.
Yeah.
Like it's too much.
I have it very minimalistic now to where I don't have much of anything on it. And I'm like, gosh, do I even need this? And it's like, well, I guess I need it for work. But,
right.
you know, I was looking to get rid of
it. Going ahead and downloading it, you know, rather than that being the default. It's got to feel yeah. great to be, I really have like, to justify it to need it.
From my personal perspective, I guess I'm a fan of like hacking the fat. I'm in the middle of a move and like that's a great time to hack
Absolutely.
A lot of crap and getting rid of stuff like that, organizing through things.
Winnow away.
It feels great. And like I changed much of my diet for 2017. It's like very basic fish, rice, vegetables, and you know, oatmeal or whatever, and like eating very minimalistically like that, and just mm-hmm. seeing to that, not eating that crap. Like,
and you feel way better, don't you?
Yeah, I cheated tonight with the sandwich I brought over, but
that makes you appreciate. But you know what I mean? Like,
oh, I did. Oh
my you appreciate
God.
It way much more. But oh, yeah. doing the
it tasted
stuff.
Incredible after like a
right.
you
There's
know,
nothing wrong with that.
A month plus of oatmeal. Yeah.
It's not like you have to. It's you're not a priest. It's not a you know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like I've been eating clean for a couple months now, and the greatest meal I've ever had was Chick-fil-A about a month ago when yeah. I had been super low carb. And
I think it is good to schedule a oh, cheat
yeah.
meal. Almost.
Fuck yeah.
Otherwise, what's the point?
Oh, yeah. It tastes so good. Oh, and Steak and Shake. And, you know, oh, I love fast food.
I can't eat at Chick-fil-A. You know that.
You can.
You can now. You got the clamps.
I can't.
Trust me. I'm going to take you into a Chick-fil-A, and I'm going to show you some of those young Mormon boys running around, and you're going to go,
well,
you're going to go, that one caught my eye.
Yes.
He's going to be sucking some dick in 3 years.
The Mormon.
See, Trust if you were me. Truly a missionary, you would, for the gay community, you would
right.
go into these places
that's,
and,
that is
and
my favorite
pull
position,
them out.
Yes, but.
Well, I don't even know how that works, but I don't want you to explain it.
You can put a dink in a dink.
But you can't put a dink
oh my God.
Without a dog.
Having flashbacks to the office here. Like, so which one opens up to receive the other?
It's no, called docking, and that's why stuff likes no, works.
I just feel so
no,
bad.
That is
the,
not, well.
The public school
okay,
system.
Okay, more on that later.
Anyways, so.
I'm actually deathly allergic to peanuts, which is why.
Oh, okay.
I can't eat at Chick-fil-A.
Oh, I gotcha.
So,
I'm definitely allergic.
And
to
that's where my mind went to.
I'm definitely allergic to penis. So,
yeah. It's problematic as a gay man.
Thank you, Mike.
Absolutely. Yeah. There is a continuation of The Office, actually, the Ricky Gervais version, and it's on Netflix, and it's a movie around the Brent character that Ricky Gervais plays, and so what he does is he takes out like a shit ton of money and takes like a bunch of unpaid days off of work because he's going to become a rock star. And it is a great movie about self-acceptance. And if you've ever heard me talk about codependency, you got to watch that movie. It is a really sweet movie. And right about the time when you go, I am so bored, I'm ready to turn this off, it gets really like, it's great. It's funny. It's just like, oh, man, I'm done because I get bored really easily.
What's it called?
I wish I knew. Let me look it up real All quick. Right. But it is a really good movie that I can't recommend enough, or I can recommend enough. I don't know which it is. I've lost all ability to perform English.
English has words that have different definitions that mean literally the opposite. Like, that's an actual thing. There's a word for words like that. I can't remember.
Stupid?
Yeah. Yeah, basically. English is crazy.
Let's see here. Let me fast forward through this. Sorry, guys. The Sheik is great, too. I've been enjoying that with the Iron Sheik. He is crazy. Yeah, man. I don't know. You'll have to look it up. But they're promoting the crap out of it just because it's his. It's Ricky Gervais. You'll see his face. So it's a good movie. All right. Thanks, guys, for joining us here on this episode of Weird Libertarians. Here's a movie on Netflix that you might enjoy, Greg. It is called Autistic Me. So you could go and screech along with your fellow friends.
Dueling knives. Ball cop put me down.
I told Pat McAfee the other day he had autistic hands. Didn't go over well.
Let your normie defense down for now that you're in a libertarian environment.
It's exactly right. I shouldn't be allowed out in public around other people. It's not.
All of a sudden, Alex Jones isn't quite as well accepted.
I did show Pat the gay frogs thing, and he was just like, what the fuck is this nerd showing me? What is he talking about?
I had a similar experience when I showed that to my dad. he was kind of confused.
The gay frogs thing?
Yeah.
Well, they don't realize that there's been tests on pesticides that get into the water that have turned female frogs.
Right.
And they're only attracted to other female frogs.
Yeah. Right.
But what normal person would?
If you've never seen the gay frogs.
I showed him that in the pickle gate. With Alex Jones.
The pickle gay?
Yeah, pickle gate.
The movie,
her inability to open the pickle jar. Hillary admitted it was already loosened.
He's so, like got like black and white photos of Hillary on Jimmy Kimmel like trying to open pickles.
Oh, that's
and
right.
And he's like, I've got all the documents here. And he's like trying to open a pickle jar and he can't even do it.
The movie is called David Brent Life on the Road.
There we go.
So check that out. All right, guys. Thanks for joining us here on this episode of We Are Libertarians. We appreciate you so much. You're all beautiful people. We thank you for donating. We thank you for listening. We thank you for sharing. We welcome all of our new listeners to the podcast. Thanks to Rob again for his kindness and generosity. And again, if you want to write for We Are Libertarians, hit us up. If you want to do a guest post or if you want to write a series of posts, let us know. We thank you so much. And we will see you next week. And as always, we promise
to do better next time.
Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.